And record?
In this recording. No?
Okay.
I pause it here. Long press and then.
Long press?
Yeah, long press. To switch off. The third press now.
Short press? Put,
yeah. Long press. Long.
Okay.
Alright.
No.
Good afternoon, honorable members. I think in the first meeting I did indicate that we want to start within 10 minutes of any meeting. And that's the structure that I want to establish. Kind of structure that I think is good. We don't keep the officials and the minister and others waiting unless it's 7 o'clock. We do have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 members there, and I think we should start. I begin by extending a very hearty welcome to Minister Colin Chavani. So we wish you well in your appointment. Congratulations. You're the new minister in the presidency, one out of two. And we're very glad that you have appeared before this committee on its first sitting. I was explaining to Mr. Maseko earlier on that in my past experience, the former minister in the presidency had never made an appearance before this committee, at least in my time, and I'm sure that by my predecessors that also was true for them. I don't know what that meant, but it was always Mr. Maseko and people who worked before him who came in the firing line, but the minister never appeared. So we are very, very grateful that you've made yourself available. Minister, I thought we'd have a big band here, your band, to give us a big reception, some excitement, but you've come alone without your team and your group. Welcome to you. Welcome also to Mr. Maseko and other officials from the CCIS. I see people from the NDDA here also. Welcome to you and your team. Is the IMC team here? Right, one person. All right, we'll welcome them when the rest of them come through. All right, fine. That's fine. All right, so I don't want to take up too much time. Maybe we should just ask the members to introduce themselves because this is virtually a new team and they might not all be known to you. So I'm going to ask Mr. Trevor Bonhomme just to introduce and say where he comes from and then we can go around the second.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Trevor Bonham. I'm from KZN, a place called Durban. I'm here deployed to Equality Commission. This is one of the committees that I'm deployed to, and I'm representing the agency at this committee. Thank you.
My name is Lando Lashem Kilde, also from KZN, from the agency. Thank you.
My name is Musa Gondi, also from KZN, representing the IFG.
We have picked up the KZN. Strategic importance of this collection. Is everybody on that side?
My name is Julie. My surname is Killian. I'm a member of representing COP in this committee. And I am from
Gauteng. My name is Nikki van den Berg. I'm the spokesperson for the Democratic Alliance, and I'm from Gauteng.
Thank you very much. And I'm Ismail Badi, also from Gauteng. So there are only two provinces represented here. That's the powerful provinces, both of them. All right, Minister, over to you and your team. I am told that you want to make a few opening remarks, so end of it.
I didn't think I would be required to say anything, but I'm here to listen. But may I ask you the reason why KZN that side came and how came it like that?
No, I'm organizing a soccer tournament, and that's the first two teams.
Sorry, the chairperson, I just want to just tell you the minute I'm here to watch your back.
Okay, no, thank you very much, Captain, and and honorable members. I didn't know that the police won't come to committees. I understand that as members of parliament ourselves, it's made important for us to be there when it's cold and when it's hot. So hopefully, this week won't become too hot for me to run away and find time not to come, but we will try to avail ourselves at all times, even when things are a bit difficult, because it's only when I participate in meetings of this nature that you come to understand the concerns which are raised by the legislature with regards to the work which we are doing. We were basically represented by the management team in GCIS, who would explain whatever we need to put before you as requested. And if the question which arises out of that process, the team will assist each other to put them together. Obviously, we have tried to bring with us other members from INC and MGDA, and so that they should be present, but we will do the presentation on their behalf. If there are any issues which relate to them, we should not be able to have the details of who can be able to. I think they should be allowed to comment, answer those that are able to offer comprehensive explanation to the issues which are being raised. As you know, that we are just from election five and a number of us are new in the portfolio, so we are trying to move as fast as possible to help with the issues which face us. I can confirm that the strategic plan which is which will be presented before you, we went through it. I've been part of that process. We went through cabinet. The cabinet understanding was despite the short space of time which we went through, so we are fully conversant with the content thereof. Obviously, you know that the changes which are taking place, which shall continue to happen, which may have an impact on the overall strategic plan for government, particularly once we have monitoring and planning portfolios well established, which may begin to lay emphasis on new things, but that could only happen probably in the next financial year, not for this financial year. So we have the MTSF strategic plan, but I just made an indication that for this financial year it will be fine, but for the next financial year we may find some adjustment as we go forward. I'm raising that so that when we come in the next financial year, we say this is how we're moving forward. You don't say, but no, last year what we presented, this thing was not there, or there's a new evidence. So they made a good adjustment, which may be necessary as we go forward. But nevertheless, I think, as for now, what we present is what has been agreed upon amongst ourselves, within the institution, and also together with Kabi. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. I think from our side, we'd like to maintain a very open and cordial relationship. Of course, in the course of our work, tensions might emerge, but we're hoping that those are the greatest tensions which should be resolved in a public way. But generally, we try to raise issues ahead of time. We don't like to ambush people unnecessarily. If there's an issue, we will come up front and raise it with you in an open and transparent way. What's the view towards resolving matters and doing good for the country? I don't know how much of time you have. You might have to leave a bit early. I don't know. You're getting this for the whole afternoon. But if you were about to leave, then I think one of the issues that had emerged previously, which might have a bearing, is we've asked the question, what's really the core function and responsibility of an entity that is located in the presidency? Now, government communication becomes, I think, we understand this will be a core competence and a core function. But we must ask them, you know, should an entity like this in GDA be located in the presidency? Is that the core competency of the presidency, or one of its core competencies? I don't know. I'm just throwing it out because I think we are in a phase where we are looking at restructuring, perhaps relocating different departments and entities, and there is that kind of regulated system there. But it's an issue which we're throwing up. And it's also the issue of ethnic tourism and the IMC. They might have defined roles, but there's also overlap. And we might want to, again, it's a further question of whether we should really look at one entity, whether it should be two entities, and the location and those kinds of things. I'm sure the members were raised in the course of the discussion, but I thought those were are two important issues for you as the minister to perhaps just note down. And then in the course of the discussion, people might want to engage further. But I'm not saying that any decision needs to be made today. But if you're leaving early on, that will be fine. We will allow you the time to move out, and then the officials can take on the issue. But that's, I think, the specific issue. So if we are over with that, then maybe we should hand over to Mr. Prosecco to introduce the team and take us through the presentation.
Maybe just before Mr. Prosecco takes over there. Just to respond to the issue raised, because he might not be able to respond to them.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Yes,
thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you. We are in a situation where we are changing a number of areas in terms of how government is organized. You will be aware that there are quite a number of changes which are taking place within government. At the moment, the major changes have been affecting government departments. The second phase is to deal with SOEs and entities or regulatory institutions which fall in the various portfolios. Now, to respond directly to the issues which you raised, I've already started a discussion on my part to deal with those issues. I didn't know that. Also in your party, you have been looking at them. But these are issues which I've already raised within ourselves to look at. I've already had a preliminary discussion with Minister Pascal with regard to tourism and the IMC's responsibilities and overlay. Obviously, if we talk about entities, it ends there, but if you talk about the functions and the responsibilities. It's a debate which needs to be located together with Foreign Affairs and the DGI and tourism and ourselves, because all of them have something to do with the promotion of the country or the image or branding of the country outside. It is a debate which, and unless we don't want to deal with his kidney, if we want to deal with his kidney, it's fine, but we might not be resolving the problem. Because the branding and the image of the country is not only reliant on the institutions which have listed. They have authorities which themselves do their own individual branding. How do they fit in the whole picture? So it's a broader debate which we thought we need to look at. With regard to MDDA, we are also looking as to whether it is properly located, where it is, where should it go. And one thing to deal with it is passionately, because you don't want a situation where people begin to lobby, it's either to go this way or this way, because that can become problematic itself. And it's something, the debate which must be located within a proper strategic debate as to what is the role. And so, and on our part, we are completely open. The letter what you have, the letter from you. So we very much willing to move anything anywhere. but I'm saying it's a debate with ourselves, we are beginning to engage with it. Once we have formulated a proper perspective on it, we'll definitely be willing to come back to you and say that this is what we think should happen. Or maybe we might come to you after having implemented anyway, but we think we'll keep you abreast on the debate. country. But we have started discussions of that on last night.
No, I've just seen the CEO nodding, shaking his head. I assume he's saying no. But in India, I don't know if you've been to India, when they say yes, they say, oh yes.
Oh, yes.
So I think that you are agreeing to it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. Good morning, everyone. Let me take the opportunity, Chair, to congratulate you once again on your appointment as Chair of this most important committee in Parliament, and also to welcome the new members of the committee to this committee. And they must all see it as a promotion, but we see this as probably the most important committee in the whole House, so you're most welcome. Just for purposes of introduction, Chair, I thought it might be just useful to explain to you the structure of GCIF. We operate reporting to the Minister who part of the Presidency. We also have regional offices in the 9 regions. And the regional offices' role basically is to coordinate communication activities of national government in the provinces. So as you are aware, there are national departments that operate in the provinces, so assist them with coordination. But those regional offices also play an important role in terms of making sure that there are communication strategies at provincial level and also at municipal level. So we assist in creating, coordinating communication structures at local government level, because our view is that for government to be able to communicate its program, policies and activities to the citizens out there, it's absolutely important that we have one coherent system that's able to communicate nationally, provincially, and also locally. So the provincial offices play a key role in making sure that the provincial structures for communication, but also municipal structures have their own communication structures. So when we started this process, there were clearly no communication portfolios or units, or even communication people in the municipalities. So we've been working quite hard to make sure that there are also communication structures at that level. Let me introduce my team. As you can see, we have an all-women team in this delegation. On my extreme left is Nebu Lingwabe. She is the DDG, we call them Deputy CEO, in charge of what we call PLL branch, which is one of the branches in the department, responsible for provincial and local liaison. So all the regional offices and the work that we do at local government level, she's the person in charge of that branch. Next to Nebu is Baby Chawa. She's the DDG Deputy CEO in charge of strategy and content at head office level. So those are the people who are responsible for developing strategy, doing research and identifying key support issues on communication and making sure that we're able to support structures of government, etc., etc. And next to Baby is Pumla Williams. She's the newly appointed DDG or Deputy CEO in charge of centralized or corporate services. So making sure that we have all the necessary support structures to function as an organization. And next to Pumla is Tariq Kilei. She's head of my office at her office. The presentation, Chair, I'm going to try and do this in between about 20 to 25 minutes so that we allow more time for discussion. So if you think that I'm rushing too quickly on some of the issues, please stop me. We'll basically look very briefly at the review of the work that we've done over the previous financial year and some of the challenges that we've identified. We'll then go on to look at the strategic priorities that we've identified. We'll talk a little bit about the budget allocation for the next financial year and talk about the people issues in the department, in other words, numbers of staff that we employ. Look at systems a little bit and then a conclusion. So we should be able to do this within about 20 or 25 minutes. Chair, the purpose of the presentation is simply to present our plan for the period 2009 to 2012. And this presentation is taking place against the background of what we all know, 15 years of stable democracy and a government that has been working quite hard to fight against the poverty in the country. So we believe that, in fact, it's an important background that informs the work that we do. We have conducted a review of the government communication system, which is basically looking at how government has communicated in the past, what are our challenges, how best can we improve the system to make sure that the public knows what government is doing in terms of programs and policies. So this review we thought was an important part of our work, especially because we're celebrating 10 years of our existence as an organization. So the review is completed, Chair. We will be pleased to come and report to you at some stage. However, a lot of the recommendations that have come out of the review will still need to be submitted to the executive or cabinet for finalization before we can implement some of the key recommendations that are coming. So we're currently in the process of briefing the minister to make sure that when we take the proposals on how we think the communication system can be improved in government, we can be able to do so with the full backing and support of the minister. Providing information on the programs and strengthening partnerships to build the country remains one of the key themes of our plans and implementation thereof in the next year that we're briefing you about. But ensuring that government-wide communication system works in unison and in cohesion with available resources to realize the government mandate again remains a key objective of GCIF. Providing strategic leadership on how government's priorities need to be implemented or being implemented over the next 5 years, also an important part of our work over the next 5 years. And in the short medium term, part of our work is going to be to make sure that we profile the country using the 2010 FIFA World Cup and promoting the country to the rest of the world, and also making sure that we outline the government's program of action through very tangible actions that we'll be talking to later on in the presentation. But if somebody were to ask you, what does GCIF aim to achieve? And simply share, expanding the reach of access to government information. So we want, as government, we know that a lot of work is being done by government, and our primary task is to make sure that, in fact, the public out there knows what government is doing. So some of the things that we do to make sure that we increase access to government information is to provide project management support and communication support to key government programs on the COA, the government's COA. So we look at how clusters are working. We have people appointed working in GCIF, but appointed specifically to work with clusters to make sure that all the programs of government in the various clusters are properly communicated. So whenever there's a cluster meeting, there will be a GCIF person there working with the communicators in the cluster to make sure that the program of the cluster is properly communicated. We also use the, what I can call the government mouthpiece, which is the OIUs, which is showing increasing usage by the media, by ordinary citizens, but we also have an online element of OIUs to make sure that we can provide key government information, key government decisions to the rest of the world. So our research is indicating that, in fact, the OIUs online is increasingly being used by not just media locally, but media also in many parts of the world. We also use that online publication to provide information to all the embassies around the world so that those who are running our missions abroad can actually know the key decisions taken by government. We're also responsible for running the government website, which we'll be able to give you numbers later on, which is increasingly being used by many citizens, news organizations, and people around the world who want to know what government information is available out there. And it's one of the most accessed websites in the country today, and we'll give you numbers later on. The some service centers, Chair, were pleased to indicate that in the previous financial year, we were able to build an additional 15 Sutong service centers, which are basically created out there to provide information to the public. But not just information, they play a key role in providing services to people. So we go to rural areas, we go to townships, where people cannot easily access government services, and we create these centers. And people can, in some cases, within walking distance, go and apply for an ID from Home Affairs, get a birth certificate, and get all kinds of services. People are also using these some services to apply for grants and other basic services. And these centers, therefore, provide a very essential service to communities in a very integrated manner, in an accessible way, so that instead of people traveling literally hundreds of kilometers to find government, who are actually using this center to bring government to the people. And what we've also started doing in the previous financial year is to identify new platforms that we can use to just take messages to people to make sure that ordinary citizens can understand what government is trying to achieve. And one example that we're sharing with you is, for instance, the use of mixtapes as a tool to communicate to young people in the country. And we're pleased to indicate that when government was launching the 16 Days of Activism campaign against the abuse of women and children in the country, we're able to use that mixed platform, which is the use of cell phones by millions of youngsters in the country. We're able to send images to 2.8 million users on this particular important campaign of government. And we believe that in fact we're able to reach out to literally millions of youngsters on this important campaign in the country. So the point there being that we're beginning to identify other important platforms that we can use to reach out to the public out there. An important tool that we also use to give information to the public is a publication called Vuvuzenzele, which is the largest publication in the country as we speak. We print about 1.6 million copies of this publication every 2 months, and this publication is sent to the most remote parts of the country, targeting particularly communities that don't have access to television, to radio, and newspapers. And we also publish it in all the different languages. Importantly, Chair, we also have a braille version of this publication to make sure that even the visually impaired can also have access to government information. And this is one thing that we are really proud of, as something that we are achieving as a government communication service. We also play the key role of communicating government decisions every 2 weeks. I sit in cabinet meetings and we announce all the key cabinet decisions. And we believe that, in fact, we are making quite a big difference in terms of getting people to know what government is doing to improve their lives by communicating on a regular basis, something that is unique. It's only a few countries in the world that have a way of announcing cabinet decisions through a media briefing. In the review, Chair, there were clear recommendations that we needed to relook and try to realign our strategic priorities as an organization. And as a result of that review, we identified 7 key priorities. Without reading the list, Chair, which is in front of you, I'll just go straight to each one of them and just giving you just examples of what we're trying to do to make sure that we can achieve those strategic priorities. The first one being providing strategic leadership in government communication. And this we do by ensuring that the government-wide communication system is guided through a coherent and coordinated effort, which is underpinned by the priorities of the new mandate. So we meet with departments, we meet with clusters, we just make sure that everybody understands what the key message of government is, and we do a lot of coordination through structures, the number of structures that we convene, to make sure that the message is coordinated. We also provide strategic communication leadership in line with government's priorities or program of action, rather. We are now proposing, Chair, for the next 5 years, that instead of coming up with an annual message, communication message, we are now proposing that government should have a 5-year message that will attain coherence and integrate government communication on programs and other policies of government. So you would have noticed in the past that each and every year, during the State of the Nation address, the President will come with one key message. In the previous year, I think it was hands on deck, something of that nature, and it changes each and every year. And what we're proposing now is that we need one key message that will be adopted by all of government that will drive communication and activities throughout that 5-year period. There may be themes in between, but we believe that, in fact, there needs to be one key message that covers a 5-year period. We also will provide strategic support to ensure that all communication is implemented along the government's strategic priorities as identified in the State of the Nation Address and the medium-term strategic framework. We'll also continue providing leadership on key government activities and campaigns. In particular, we've identified the energy campaign as probably one of the most important challenges that we face as a nation. So as GCIS, we'll be running a campaign to make sure that we reach out to citizens about saving energy and the need for people to save the way we use energy. will also profile the work of the new administration after a 3-month period. There's been a lot of debate in the media about whether this government is adopting the 100-day principle as implemented in the US and other parts of the world. In this country, this is not yet a common policy, but we believe that instead of providing the usual within the past, we used to provide government updates through briefings every 3 months, every 2 months rather. We now actually target a 3-month period where we can be able to say after 3 months, new government was put in place, this is what was achieved, these are the challenges that remain, and we believe that in fact we will continue to keep the public informed about what the new government is achieving. The second key strategic priority for the period is to strengthen the government-wide communication system to achieve a greater level of effectiveness and proper alignment throughout the system. So we're looking at national government, and in national government between departments, provincial government and departments within a province, and also municipalities. We believe that we have to achieve a higher level of alignment in this regard, and that becomes the priority then for the next 5 years. So we'll continue to strengthen the communication system to enhance the comments to ensure effective communications across the 3 spheres, and we'll also promote the use of strategic partnerships to make sure that the message goes out. And what we'll be trying to promote through these partnerships is that we need to get stakeholders out there to understand that changing the lives of ordinary people is not just the task of government, but that it must be government working in partnership with other stakeholders in society. So you see, for instance, the SUNEC is a classical example, is that around HIV and AIDS, we will be making sure that SUNEC is strengthened and that there's common messages emerging not just from government but from all other stakeholders. So that's just one example of why we think it's absolutely essential that government works in partnership with the various stakeholders. We'll also make sure that well-functioning communication units are created, set up, and strengthened in all spheres of government and in all departments to make sure that each and every department, when it has a strategic plan, there's a clear communication strategy that will support the work of that particular department. We'll also be working with DGs to make sure that there are proper and clear policy guidelines. We're also proposing a scorecard, a balanced scorecard, that will be used to guide government communication in the various departments. So this has been finalized from our side, and we're in the process of taking that scorecard to the various departments. The third key strategic priority for the period is to continuously communicate and inform the public on policies and programs of government to improve the lives of ordinary people. So, firstly, one of the things that we'll be doing is to just popularize the government program of action through the magazine Google Zanzana so that people know what the program of action is of this particular government. So over the next 5 years, people must know how their lives will change. And as government is implementing its program, people must see that this is as a result of the work of government. One of the key challenges we have noted is that in a number of instances, government implements programs, but communities don't often relate or see the link between what government is achieving or what government is delivering and the improvements of their lives. So when we launch Tosca example, is that when government is building houses in a particular community, you will never see a sign that says this is another project of government. What the only sign that you will see in those instances is the sign of the construction companies that are actually building the houses. So people don't see that this is as a result of the government implementing its program of action. So those are some of the things that we'll be doing over the period. We'll also be pushing and promoting the notion of Izimbizo Chair, because we believe that it's still absolutely essential for members of the executive to go and interact with communities so that as we implement, we don't just go and talk to people, but people can actually tell government what they think we are doing wrong as government. So those platforms we believe are absolutely essential. So we're not just looking at, in this particular case, in these urban communities, but we will be promoting and pushing for Izimbizo type activities for government to interact with the various sectors and stakeholders to just let them know what government is doing, but also say what can be, for example, the academia, opinion makers, NGOs, CBOs, to tell them what government is doing, but ask them what can they do to contribute to improving the lives of ordinary people. So that's what we'll be doing or promoting during the next year. The next key strategic priority is to make sure that as an organization we learn and explore communication methods and practices to enhance communication across the board. So we'll find ways of improving communication techniques, tools and methods, as I've already indicated, finding new ways of communicating and reaching out to as many people as possible. Moving on to the fifth strategic objective, we will be implementing programs that are aimed at leading and guiding the domestic and international marketing of South Africa. The issue that you raised, Chair, about the IMC and SA Tourism, and we believe as GCIS that it's absolutely essential that a lot of work is done to reposition and brand South Africa. So over the past period, we've been working quite hard to coordinate the work of the IMC, the IRTS, SA Tourism, the Department of Foreign Affairs, to just make sure that we begin to develop a brand that we can actively promote to the rest of the world, but most importantly, also mobilize South Africans to support this brand so that when people come to this country, they can know what makes South Africa or South Africans proud of their country. So the IMC will give more details about what exactly we will be doing in that regard. But we will be working quite closely with the IMC and other players to begin to identify issues that we believe have a negative impact on the reputation and competitiveness of the country so that we can come back to government to say, as far as the brand is concerned internationally, these are the few issues that if we get right, it will improve our standing globally. And so, for instance, we could, as an example, identify crime as one of the issues that is having quite a negative effect on the brand. And then begin to identify strategies, both for dealing with the issue of crime, but also communication campaigns, to make sure that we communicate better what we're doing to deal with the issue of crime so that we can improve the country's reputation globally. So this is an important part of the work. So the IMC will deal more extensively with this issue. Building partnerships with strategic holders in pursuit of the GCIS vision. I've already talked about partnerships here, Chair, so I don't need to say too much on this particular one, except to talk to the third bullet there. That's one of the major partnerships that we'll be working towards achieving is to make sure that we strengthen the partnership between the media and government. We will work hard to make sure that we move away from this perception that the media is the enemy or if there isn't a good working relationship between government and the media. We respect the role that the media play, but at the same time, we believe that in fact it's unconstructive for a hostile relationship to exist between government and the media. So one of the things that we'll be working towards is to have a session on a regular basis between cabinet and members of SANEC to begin to discuss challenges that we believe are facing the country and identify issues that we think are a challenge for the media in this particular country. And some of the issues, for instance, that we may have to deal with in this regard is the need for greater access to be given to the media by ourselves as government communicators, but at the same time begin to raise important questions about what role does the media play in our country and identify some of the challenges in that regard. But we can talk about that at a later stage. And then sustaining communication campaign against the abuse of women and children, because we think that that's still going to be an important part of the program of action of government. We were working quite closely with the LOC and the host cities to just make sure that we anchor communication around the Confederation Cup in 2010. And we're pleased to say that the Interministerial Committee on the 2010 is working very closely with the LOC to make sure that we are ready for hosting this event, but most importantly, that we are able to take advantage of hosting this event to promote the country to the world. And we believe that, in fact, we are already seeing some positive signs around this one. In the initial stages of us hosting or preparing to host the World Cup, there were all the negative stories around the world that we're not going to be ready, the stadiums are not going to be ready. And through sustained communication from the part of government and major stakeholders, we're able to actually turn those perceptions around. So media, both local and abroad, have almost accepted the fact that we will be ready and we will be able to host very successful tournaments. and that's as a result of the sustained communication partnership that we're able to strike with the LOC and other stakeholders. So we believe that we now face the challenge of making sure that as we host this tournament successfully, we are able to turn perception globally around the country. And we think that in fact that there are already signs that we're making progress in that regard. Through the Chukwam Service Centers, we, as I said, will bring services closer to communities, but most importantly, our target share is to make sure that each municipality has a Chukwam Service Center by 2014, and we believe that in fact we're on course to achieve that particular goal. Community media is an important part of what we do, and I'm pleased that the MDDA will be giving you more details. But our challenge, our task is to make sure that we continue to ensure that we achieve a greater level of diversity and development within the media and communication landscape. And the work that we're doing through the MDDA enjoys the support of the broadcast streams and electronic media houses. And here, we believe that we're making extensive progress, as the MDDA presentation will demonstrate later this afternoon. Coming to the numbers, which is part of ensuring an optimally functioning institution, these are the numbers, Chair. In the previous financial year, our budget was 418 million rands, 418 million rands, and after the adjustment that we received in September, the allocation increased to 439 million rands. But by the end of the 08-09, 427 million, 100 million was spent, resulting in about 12 million rands, which was unspent, which is unlike our record in the past. And as you know, we've been able to spend our budget 100% in the previous year, but in this recent financial year, we are unable to spend 100% of it. And the reason for the underspend that we're talking about is largely because we received an amount of 7.4 million rand for the energy efficiency campaign that we're able to implement at the beginning of this particular year. But this amount of money was allocated actually late in the financial year. And that is why we're not able to spend the total budget allocated to us. There's also an amount of 4 million rand which was allocated for the communication strategy for the opening of Parliament and the presidential inauguration, which also took place after the financial year. So these are the two main reasons why we have an amount of about 12 million rand, which represents 2.8% of money that was unspent. But it's something that we believe we'll be able to attend to. Over the MTEF period, expenditure allocated to us will increase at an average rate of about 4.7%. Mainly because GCIS and IMC will have completed the activities relating to the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Over the MTF period, the department received an additional allocation of funds of 16 million rands in the 2009-2010 financial year, another 33 million rands in the following year, and subsequently 33 million rands as well in the outer year, resulting in revised baseline allocation as indicated below. So next year, or the current financial year, the amount becomes 281 million, subsequent year 533, and it comes down to 504 in the outer MTEF tier. Chair, here is a list of activities. So we've been given additional allocation by Treasury. So this is where we'll be spending the additional money that we were getting. So one doesn't need to go through the whole list, Chair, as members can see. That's where the money will be going to. Human resources development, Chair, without going into details, we just thought we should highlight the fact that we're actually spending a substantial amount of both time and money developing and training our staff to make sure that we are ready to fulfill the mandate that has been allocated to us. So without going into details, we had a list of salaries that we gave to our staff members, the amount of money spent on short courses, management training, and pleased to say that we have 36 interns that were placed on an internship program that we implemented successfully as GCIS. 16 were employed, and 12 of those who subsequently got jobs within GCIS itself. These are again details of the learnership that we were able to implement and training programs that we also implemented for communication officers. Now, the 41 communication officers are thinking about their chair. These are not just GCIS staff members. These are communicators coming from other government departments, provincial, national, and even local governments. So this is the training that we're providing to the communication system as a whole. And when they qualify, we do this in partnership with VET and the Mandela Rhodes Foundation. So when they qualify, they get a professional certificate, which actually gives them a formally recognized qualification. Again, as I'm saying, these are not GCIS employees, but communicators from other departments. So we believe that, in fact, we're achieving quite a lot as far as training and increasing capacity of communicators in government is concerned. On representativity, these are the numbers, Chair. Without going into too much details, we have a complete staff complement of 494, with 470 posts that are filled, 24 funded posts where they are currently vacant, and as a result of people resigning or moving to other departments, etc. But we believe that our rate is actually still quite high as far as the whole government system is concerned. So as far as the representativity is concerned, we did that, we break them down according to race and gender, and we think that in fact we are achieving quite a lot. What we were pleased to highlight to the committee is the fact that people with disabilities make up 2% of staff. You may be aware that the government target is actually 2% of those employed in government must be disabled people. So we're clearly within the target set by government. All job offers that we issue are routinely sent to about 20 organizations working with people with disabilities. And we also get access to a database for the SA Federal Council on Disability Member Organizations. So we try and make sure that as we recruit, we give fair opportunities to people with disabilities. On IT chair, we don't need to go into details, but these are just some of the activities that we'll be implementing over the next MTF period to just make sure that we increase the capacity and effectiveness of the organization. So I don't want to bore you too much with the IT stuff. Members can read it at the later stage. So in conclusion, Chair, the review we've undertaken, and we believe we'll be able to implement the recommendations of that review over the next few months. We believe this will strengthen the system in its entirety, and it will also help bring about an even better coherence and integration as far as the communication system is concerned. And the communication system we're talking about here is not just GCIS, but it's the whole communication system, including communication units in departments, in the provinces, and at local government level. As we said, the far-reaching recommendations still require cabinet endorsement, and we will get an opportunity to provide this report and discuss with the minister before we take those recommendations to cabinet. Implementation of the strategic plan hinges on our people and partners, without whom no lasting success is possible, and on continued guidance and wise counsel of this committee, whose support has been unwavering in the past and has helped shape our strategic focus and implementation. And with this few words, Chair, would like to invite the committee to continue asking us difficult questions, because we think that in fact it helps to shape the kind of work that we try to achieve as an organization. Thank you very much. That's the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sacco. Members, that's open for comments, questions, discussion.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to know how far successful is the program to synchronize the communication efforts between where you sit, Mr. Maseo, and the various spokespersons of government departments, and particularly municipalities, because we think that it is joined that it comes very strong at the level where you are, as you are communicating a particular product of government output. But as you listen with a bit of radio or television, you find that a lot needs to be done in the training of spokesperson representing various structures, which be it government departments, be it municipalities, and so on. Is there a particular program to actually bring these people up to speed with a particular level of expertise?
Thank you.
Firstly, thanks with a powerful presentation. I've got only two questions. First question is about Tucson centers. Out of 15 Tucson centers, how many that you can safely say are properly functioning and they are providing what they are supposed to do in terms of the research idea, and also what is the role of GCIS after the construction or after handing over of the Tucson Center to the municipality? Then what's the role of GCIS in terms of managing it or in terms of looking after it? And also, in your one of your slides, where first I was checking what slides, GCIS strategic priorities, where you said additional funds will be used for. I don't see Tucson Center there, only provincial officers. That's why I'm asking what's the role of the GCI after the structure has been handed over to the municipality. But other thing, can I be assisted? What is the Rehabisa Swana project, if I'm the assistant, because I'm new in this community? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mr. Maseko, I only have, I think, two questions for you. Looking at your presentation, as we have, you know, numbered all your strategic objectives, I think, I just want to ask, the collaboration, because some of the things that you have said in your strategic in your presentation, as I am looking at it, I am thinking some of these strategic objectives, you have the Department of Telecommunication, and I don't know what would be the relationship in terms of have integrating some of your programs through the Department of Communication. And then also another clarification that I want to know, this your strategic objective of Rehabisa Fund. I'm just thinking, I don't know whether, what is the relationship between the fund and Metro? Are you going to share the responsibility in terms of making sure that the GCIS and the Telemetro, you are going to recognize funding, both of you, in terms of budget and in terms of planning? Because surely, I know in terms of the jurisdiction, the local government is responsible also to make sure that they give things to the country. And they also and then again, another one, you talked about scorecards so that you can give, think you said government communications department. I just want to know the timeline for, you know, for doing that, so that when next time you come here, you can give us that we have already implemented. What are you talking about? Thank
you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wonder, Mr. Teku, whom I, by the way, know from when he was through the Department of Education and something, quite some time. Thank you for his presentation. But secondly, I just wanted to ask two questions. The one relates to, if we're talking about the review, and we're currently considering the new budget, how will those programs that would now possibly be reviewed fit into the new, into this year's financial provision made? Will there simply be adjustments made between the programs, etc.? Are they comfortable? We noticed that the underspending was actually due to very late additional funds being made available, but in this year, will you feel comfortable that the adjustments that they are offering would fit into the new budget, yeah, and the provision. Secondly, just one question, and please, everybody must understand that it is a new sort of committee. Sometimes I have noticed that you would, for instance, have some government departments having specific advertisements on the SABC television. Do you get special rates from SABC television? And secondly, one would ask, if you do not, if it is a service for which there is no competitor, why do you advertise? Why don't you just use the sort of communications department with the regular briefings, etc., to create an opportunity for news to carry certain events? Why is it necessary? I'm not referring to something like, for instance, the IEC when it's time to register and they must alert people because the service is an important course for those people who need those services to do it within a restricted period of time. I'm also not referring to youth day activities. I'm just referring to general advertisements that are sometimes placed, and I don't understand why do we waste public money on those sort of advertisements. What is the role of GCIE in that regard?
Do you want to respond to this question? Because there are more hands and it might just be too much. Let's take this round and we'll come back.
Thank you, Chair. I wonder if I'm able to handle the first question, which was on the Tsong position.
Thank you, Chair. The question of the proper functioning of the Tsong Center, as well as the role of a GCIS once the center has been established. Just that, you know, when we talk about the functioning of the Tsong Service Centers, one can say they vary. But the most important thing for us is that for the centers to be working and for them to be seen to be working, it's important that we have to have service providers at those centers, and most of those service providers need to be government. We did some research in 2006, 2007, and some of the biggest challenges that were actually identified was that the most government departments do not actually use those centers as they should be. And in some cases, for instance, for the ones, the departments that do come in, if you allow me to make an example, there's a direct relationship between the functions of the Department of Home Affairs and the functions of SASA or Social Development. Now you might find that, let's say, Home Affairs comes on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, and SASA comes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And I mean, that frustrates the coordination, because then you find that people have to come on Monday, then and they have to come back again on Tuesday. The other problem is that you have that, you find that the quality of service, you know, the ethos, the Bantufili service delivery principles are not being adhered to. People are complaining that the service providers come, whereas functions are supposed to, the offices are supposed to open at 8 o'clock. You find that people come at 10 o'clock and they have long lunches or long tea times. You know, all those, the whole service delivery quality standards, ethos of Bantufili. We also found that ICT actually is one of the biggest challenges with regards to that, because when we introduced these centers, we wanted people to get quality fast services. But because there is no access to ICT, people have to come to the district office, apply manually, and then the officials have to take the form to the to the regional office, process them and come back again. And I mean, if you had a computer and they had access to connectivity, it's just going to be very easy to process them. And these are some of them. The other problems that were identified was the whole branding and access. The branding itself was a critical challenge that was identified. But then also, these centers are being owned by the municipalities. You find that municipalities are struggling to get money from the national and provincial departments for rentals. So there are big issues around the rentals of the by tenants, if you allow me to use the word as a center. Going back to the GCIS, handing over, I would say this program is actually run by the municipalities together with the provinces. And that we facilitate in playing a role in identifying the spaces or the places where they should be built, doing needs analysis in terms of what are the services that the people are prioritizing and they want. So we play that role. We don't necessarily, we do not build and we don't even have the money to do that. But once the program, I mean the center is established, we are one of the tenants in the centers, and we actually make sure that we bring in content information. We run programs, I mean we talked about the 16 days of activism programs are being run there. When we do have evening visits, they are being facilitated in the centers. We provide information, so we become one of the service providers in the center, and we help the municipalities and the library the development of communication strategies for those events or campaigns or projects that are being run in the center. I think
that's fine. What we're also just about to implement, Chair, is a project to conduct a review of the center. We're working with National Treasury, we're putting together a plan to identify what the weaknesses and challenges are and what corrective action needs to be taken immediately. So that review, we'll just analyze the terms of reference for that and the funded budget for it, so we'll be implementing such. I think it is indeed an important question, Chair, that needs to be looked at. Members, on this question about how successful are we to just synchronize and align our work with the spokesperson, departmental spokesperson, particularly at local government level. This is a big challenge, Chair. What we put together at this particular point in time is a process of creating, coordinating fora. I try and meet with the spokespersons of all departments at least every fortnight to discuss and identify, we do a media scan environment, check what are the major issues coming up. We then meet with them to say what are the constructions that need to be put in place. So we're trying to do that on a regular basis. Not all of them attend these meetings. There's issues about the fact that they report to their DGs and ministers. So if one doesn't come, we've got limited capability to actually call a spokesperson to come and account. But we've created structures to do that. We also meet with every quarter. We have what we call a government communicators forum. We call all government communicators to a meeting to identify key communication issues. We also talk about how to improve communication generally. So we give guidance about what needs to be done to improve communication. We also launched a very important project last year of implementing a communication system at municipal level. You're absolutely correct. This is one area of government where there's minimum communication taking place with communities. So that program was approved by Cabinet. We took it to SALGA, SALGA approved. So we're in the process of setting up communication units in municipalities. Because what we found when we did a review was that municipalities did not even have communication people responsible for communication. So communities are totally in the dark about the good things that municipalities were doing to improve the lives of ordinary people. So that structure has been put in place. What's going to be the next phase of the program is to begin a training program for these communicators at municipal level. So what I suppose needs to happen now is that Minister Chavani needs to convene another meeting with the new minister in DTLG to just say how do we take the process forward. And I think the training part is going to be absolutely essential. But I think it's an important challenge that we face. Chair, the two questions raised about Rehabilitation project, which maybe we made a mistake by not explaining that. Rehabilitation is a government-wide project, which is basically to find and improve government accommodation in the city of Tshwane. So it's a project run by Department of Public Works. So it's looking for improving office accommodation for national departments in Pretoria, which includes renovating existing buildings, which includes finding new accommodation for departments, which includes building new buildings for the city. So it's a national government project, but it's being done in partnership between Public Works and the city of Tshwane itself. So in our particular case, we're basically looking for better accommodation for GCIS, but the organization has grown. We're now already occupying two offices, two different buildings in Pretoria. So it makes coordination much more difficult. The building we're in is very old, lived by a headache and all those kinds of things. So we are in the process of finding new accommodation for ourselves. Initially, it was about building a new building for GCIS, but now I think that project is off the table. So we're looking at finding new accommodation for us. So when we're talking about money being spent on accommodation, we're basically saying finding better accommodation for GCIS to be part of this public works Rehabilitation project. But the city is fully behind it, they are well fit. Because Tshwane, it's a national capital, but it's also a city. So whatever we do to build the visibility of national government, improving accommodation, we also need to work with the city to make sure that we also meet their needs as a country. So it's a joint partnership with the city of Tshwane. Collaboration between ourselves and Department of Communication, I suppose we have different mandates. The Department of Communication is dealing more with telecommunications and policy issues, issues pertaining to the SADC, regulating the telecoms industry, whereas we focus mainly on the government communication side, just giving information to people. The only place where you could say there's a bit of an overlap is that we, is through actually mainly the MDDA, because MDDA is supporting local community media. DOC is also responsible for supporting community radio stations in particular, and we come in from an MDDA perspective to provide training, support, guidance, and mentoring, and all those kinds of things. So at that level, you could say there's a bit of an overlap, but in that regard, MDDA works very closely with the DOC. So if there's a particular project that we identify as needing the attention of both MDDA and DOC, and we cooperate, there's one or two projects that the MDDA can give examples to. But in terms of our broader mandate, we totally have totally different mandates. The scorecard, from our side already, we'll finalize the scorecard. And basically what the scorecard will do, member, is basically to say, this is how we want government communications to be measured. So when a minister is a head of communication at this particular point in time, there isn't a scientific way of measuring whether that head of communication is actually performing and achieving the goals of communication in that particular department. So the scorecard says, this is what is expected of a government communicator, this is what they must do, these are the standards, and we are giving that to departments. So from our side, it's almost finalized. We just need to probably submit it, brief the minister, submit it to the minister for a sign-off, and then we can distribute it to other departments. So we can say we can do it in the within the next 2 months. We can start distributing it as soon as it is finalized. But from our side, the document is finalized. It is ready. Member Killian, questions on the review of the financial education. I think that we departments are going to go through, all departments are going to go through a process which started at the Lesotho, because we have a government program of action. We then have the new mandate of the new government. So what government is currently doing is basically to make sure that the new mandate is incorporated and becomes the core of government's program of action. And the same applies to us. We've done the review, the new mandate has come in, so we need to just review our program and see the extent to which what we've been doing is actually in line with the new mandate of this government, of the new government. So yes, they may have the financial implications, but at this stage, we can't say how much additional money we may require if one wishes to fulfill the mandate of the new government. But we just said that when we completed the review, we thoroughly looked at the POA program as announced by the president. We'll then be able to say these are the changes that are required in terms of activities, and there may or may not be financial implications, but we can't say that what exactly at this stage. The questions about the adverts on SABC, do we get special rates? Yes. We have what is called centralized buying, media buying, as GCIS. So if a department wants to advertise or buy media either on SABC or any other media platform, radio, TV, newspapers, they put that request to us and we actually procure that media on their behalf. And in procuring that media, we've allocated that tender to a company, and that company goes out and negotiates discounts with all media, including the SABC. So, and the point is that in negotiating those discounts, you make sure that you get the best possible price for getting that media space. And they do that on behalf of government. And that's precisely the reason why government decided to centralize media buying, so that if we come with a massive lot of buying media worth hundreds of millions of rands, we are able to actually negotiate better deals with the media. And that's what it is, centralized media buying. But your next question, an interesting one, why do we advertise, why don't we just use media platforms or media press conferences to announce our stuff to the public? Okay, I'll use that the two are not mutually exclusive. When you have an important policy to announce, when you have an important project or program to launch or implement, you sit down and say, this is our strategy, this is your target audience, this is the message that you want to communicate out there. And from time to time, you make decisions, judgment calls about whether the best way to announce that policy or program is through a media conference. In some cases, you say, yes, in this particular case, because you want the message to be given out on a regular basis so that people can actually receive that message in a particular way, you then opt for an advertisement. But we don't believe that, in fact, the policy should be either to advertise or go for media briefings. In a lot of the cases, let's take the example of the energy campaign. It's a campaign that you want to get ordinary citizens out there to save electricity because of the crisis that they're experiencing. Now, you have a press conference, you make that announcement, and the media don't always cover 100% of what you say. You could say three or four important things in your media conference, but the media may cover one or two of those points. So not all your message gets across. So in that particular case, because it's such an important national priority, you then say, yes, we'll have a media conference, but you also need to have an advert on radio and television so that people hear these messages and hear them often enough so that they can actually internalize it. So that's one particular example of why you need both. So in our view, it's not a question of choosing between advertising and using press conferences. But we can concede that there are times when you look at adverts. I mean, as you say, we also do see advertisements in the newspapers, on radio. We hear on radio, we don't see on radio. We see on television adverts and we say, this should not have happened. You could have conveyed a message better, either through a press conference or even a pamphlet, not always going for an advert on television. And even in newspapers, you find that there's half a page of an advert, half of that space is taken by the face of a person, and the message only occupies the other half. So in that particular case, you could argue that it's not the best use of the taxpayer's money. But that's why we are trying to centralize this media buying service. But that is GTIS who also provide a service of providing advice. So when a department comes to us and say, we want to put an advert, we don't just take it and paste it in the newspaper. We engage departments and say, maybe the better way to convey this particular message is to go for radio instead of TV, or even go for community radio instead of commercial radio, or those kinds of things. So that's the data that we try to add to departments. And that covers your last question about what role do we play exactly in the society. Okay, I think we've covered all questions.
Thank you very much. Can you move to the last round? Because before I have the presentation coming. Ms. Obtua.
Well, I really accept the explanation of the two something that is given. I'm so concerned because if you look at the Hansard, I happen to be one of the people who have been charged in to debate on this issue of NPCs. And you'll find that some of the issues that have been highlighted here are the challenges that we had for the last 9 years that I've been in Parliament. And I thought by now we would have really improved on that. I'll just make a rider to what the other questions that have been asked, just to ask whether the 15 new Tusom centers, are they relatively in rural areas where we think we need them mostly? And one other thing I wanted to talk about is this Mixit. Yes, and it is a good idea. It's really good. And I've attended, I think, about 3 of the 16 days activism events. What I'm concerned about is whether the information reaches the targeted people, because in those activities that I've attended, I've seen a lot of people who attended were members of staff, and I don't know whether it reaches the relevant people. For instance, I'm talking about the broad women's movement, the women from the churches, the women from all over the city. And the ordinary women in our constituency who are exposed to violence. That's the reason why I want to know whether we do reach the targeted people. I have also noticed that you have, maybe when we get the presentation chairperson from the IMC, it will address the concern that I have about the overlapping that I've just listened to. The 2.8 unspent amount, I just want to raise my concern about it. I think the allocation that you got for the energy efficiency, to me it's not, you know, the reason that you gave to us, I don't think it's a reason for over not spending the money that has been given to the department. Maybe we'll talk about this when we get to other avenues, or maybe we can talk about it in our debate. But I don't think it is satisfying the explanation that you got. Chairperson, one simple question I want to ask about the state of the nation. You said you have done editions on Braille. Is it in circulation already? Because I haven't seen it. Those are the questions that I have posed.
Is that
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I just want to make the next statement. What I've learned in this short time I've been part of the Portfolio Committee on Communication, that this GCIS department is a very well-run department, and they spend the money well, and I want to congratulate GCIS on the work they've done, because I think it's very important that we must have an informed nation, because I think when people are not informed, they are very, very restless. Just one extra question. Then all the new departments, because we know that the cabinet is much bigger than it was previously, how do you intend to sort of communicate this new structures to the ordinary people of South Africa, especially in the rural areas, so that they know exactly what to do? And that last thing is, you spent money to communicate with the population. What type of feedback are you getting back from the people to know that you are sort of hitting the target? Thank you, Mr. Chairperson.
If I may just ask the question or two. I might have, maybe it's a figment of my imagination, but I thought I heard the president saying that he is going to be opening up a presidential hotline. And I might be wrong. Yes, for complaints and corruption and those kinds of things and public responses. Now, it's a very good idea where the public, in a sense, has got direct access to the president of the country. But that thing can go horribly wrong if you don't have a very efficient response service where you're able to respond to public feedback or issues that they raise in a responsive way. You write back promptly, or you respond to the calls, etc. I haven't heard anything about that. But that seems to have been a presidential commitment, so I'd like to... it might not be in your confidence, I don't know. I'm assuming that it might be part of GCIS's work, it might not be. So that could be clarified for me. The second thing is, I want to ask, do you have any partnerships with other state-owned entities? The very structured relationships. If I take the SABC, for example, now, I don't want, you know, the SABC, it's a public broadcaster, it's independent, etc. So it can't just be a market for government or that kind of thing, or propaganda tool. But it is perhaps one of the most important medium of communication, mass communication. And is there a structured relationship between you and them about how you communicate government messages, what time is allocated, what kinds of programs, in a more structured way than just a breaking news story or reacting to some allegation or something of that sort? There's also the post office. I mean, there are at least 1,000 or so post offices in this country. It's an area where large numbers of people come for services. Have you got a relationship with them about how we can use that, you know, those institutions for communicating messages or imparting messages to the public? And then the last question I have is, I hear that you want to have a 5-year core message. But, you know, a message for over 5 years will become bored. Nobody will listen to it. Do we have, I mean, something that's more an interdepartmental kind of thing? I don't want to use the word thing. But let's say one message that I see coming through from the presidency is getting the public service to work. Responsive public service, efficient public service. Now, that's a critical theme, this battle failure that we're talking about. Has it really seeped through? Are we reinforcing that over and over and over again? Because that's what the public measures a government back. When they go to any government department or office, and the quality of the service that you get there, and the first thing is that the government doesn't care. I'm in competitive post, etc. I just don't get the service I desire. So I'm looking at that kind of thing. Is there, I mean, 4, 5, or 6 core messages that will come through repeatedly from all government departments or from GCIS? which are central to the overall, you know, public good in a sense. I might not be articulating it correctly, but I think you'll get the gist of what I'm saying. So it's not just, you know, branding or the energy campaign, but something that's more deeper about getting the fundamentals right of our system and communicating that message over and over again.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to ask a question, just for out of curiosity. You know, Mr. Masaba, I've listened to you in one of your strategic objectives. I'm just going back. You have said you are also going to run a campaign on 16 days campaign. And in one of your slides, you are saying you also want the additional allocation of funds. And as I'm sitting here, I'm just thinking, because I know that we have, before we used to have OSW, which OSW was responsible, in fact, in running that 16 days of campaign. And surely the OSW will definitely budget for, you know, for that. Now we're the new ministry. I just want to, you know, just to find out, do you think, from your side, you have also said, do you have funds for running that 15 days of campaign? And the new ministry also, they are also, you know, going to request treasury, their program, the budgeting on the same thing. What is the communication in terms of, you know, in terms of planning? Because I know the 16 days of campaign, normally the government will request all the gender focal points. By then we used to have gender focal points, but I don't know, because of the new ministry, what is it called? They will write letters to different ministers to actually contribute towards the 16 days of campaign. So I don't know how to do, how can you work smart and utilize the money in a good way.
Okay. Chair, we just ask my colleagues to elaborate on some of these things. The first point that we should just make is that we are not coming to the campaign, to the portfolio committee, to ask for money. It will be inappropriate for us to do so. So we come here to say these are our plans for the next 5 years. This is the money that's been allocated, and we're going to try and do what we want to do within the budget allocation that's been given. Secondly, we think that with the new administration in place, with a new mandate, we're going to have to review the way we're doing things. And there may just be changes in the way we do our business as GCIS. And there may be financial implications, but we can't even tell what that is at this stage. And knowing the economic climate in which we're operating now, we do expect that instead of Treasury saying, here's additional money, chances are that they will actually come to us and say, we're cutting a budget. So that's quite possible. So we're going to have to try and make sure that we marry what we are trying to do with a new mandate, but marry that with the limited resources that are at our disposal. So finding better ways of communicating a message without necessarily operating in a mindset that says additional money will be given, because we don't think that, in fact, that's going to be happening. But to come back to your example about a budget, the way, and I'll ask David to elaborate on this one, if you look at our budget, I've said that we've implemented this campaign in partnership with other departments. But if you look at our budget allocation, you'll not see any budget line item saying 16 days. And that's because there may be some allocation for it. But some of the campaigns that we implement, we actually do so in partnership with other government departments. So if you want to launch a government-wide campaign, the only exception, for instance, energy campaign, it's government saying that we need a campaign to educate South Africans about saving energy. And then National Treasury says we'll fund money, we'll give you. So they gave us 15 million rands for that. It's a one-shot example.
But then there will be other campaigns that we run on behalf of government. For example, we ran a campaign on economic opportunities for the past 2 years, where we're telling ordinary South Africans about economic opportunities that were created by our democracy. We then get departments in the economic cluster to actually contribute money into this campaign, and then we ran a TV program on SABC just educating people about how to take advantage of the economic opportunities. So these are different models. In some cases, we get a private allocation. In other cases, we actually take a campaign, implement it in partnership with departments, with other departments actually contributing the funding. But David, can you just, the 15-day target audience and
I think with respect to, I think what Member Mamsori was saying, let me just start off with the mixed thing. It was the first time that we tried that methodology, and it worked in as far as really spreading the message. Where you were referring to is where there was also activation of the cyber dialogue, which was driven by the partners in the 16 days of activism. It's a methodology we're starting, and we do know that sometimes it depends on whether the recipients have got airtime or not. So there's also a combination, but we think it's an effective platform to spread the messages of government. But with respect to what Member Gaz was saying, first is we've had a discussion, indeed, considering the fact that now we have a Ministry of Women and Children. But we decided as senior managers in DCI that we will not necessarily dump the campaign. It is going to be difficult for us to, for this year in particular, because we do have 3 million allocated to us to coordinate all of national government communication, only communication, with respect to 16 days of activism. And indeed, you're correct, all the other partners do actually contribute to the whole campaign, but it becomes quite massive, and a whole range of partners come in with their budgets. And it turned out to be the most effective partnership that we've had of all the campaigns that she has coordinated. And we think that after this, in fact, during this period, we're going to be engaging with the Minister, Ministry of Women and Children, to find out exactly how we actually take the campaign into their office, because possibly you're correct, that's where it belongs henceforth. Our CFO, who was a CFO, did say that, as it is now, with that money will still come to GCI, because it is an allocation of the last FTF. Once we engage into another MTF, which is June, July, correct? We're going to highlight some of the programs that will have to shift from our GCIS and begin to tie to what the chair was saying, do the work that we're supposed to do. And that's one of those campaigns. But generally what we're going to do is we're going to sustain communication. But that communication is definitely coordinated. We don't drive it alone. Therefore, it becomes a government communication coordinated program. So we're going to look at to deal with that. Can I, if you allow me, Chairperson, CEO also, just to talk to the theme. What we did is, when we submitted to Cabinet Lokotra, we did propose a 5-year core message. And the recommendation that came from Lokotra was that we should sustain the core message of working together. Under that, we then have sub-themes for every type of activity. Example is exactly what you're saying. What we've done is just as we realized with our review that we've been talking and emphasizing communication outside just government and the people. We've undermined intensive communication within government or public servants. So one of the things that we're going to do with that theme is indeed when we do, for instance, go to the government administration cluster. Government administration cluster will have working together, we can do more. As a sub-team, we can say, working together as a public service, we can do more. And that targets the public service in government. The same with economy, the same with the social transfer. Why we think it's important to do a 5-year theme is because we realized when we were doing our review that a lot of countries that have got sustained communication campaigns, a few of us traveled abroad, went to Tunisia, to Brazil, to the US and to UK. And they found that with us having to chop and change the theme all the time, people don't see, for instance, if we had kept the theme of a better life for all, we could have had something to hang on when we progress. We can say something like 30 million people now receiving social grants. Together we can do more. You know? And it becomes that in the psyche of the people that we're working towards a goal of making a better life for all. And as we're doing that, we're building houses. You know, you attach it to a theme, to a core message. You ask the people to grant. It's a core message of a better life for all. And these countries succeed because they keep one thing that is connected to the electoral mandate. As long as it's still the same party that is running the mandate, that party should drive, actually the government should drive, actually, the same message. So we just thought it's important to actually sustain a broad message that is accepted by government, and it proposed it to cabinet, and it was actually approved with a refinement to say that it has to be a government message, of course.
Check the question about some service centers, 9 years, same issues, and where are these 15-year centers?
Okay. Just to say, the research that we did over the years, and the last one was the 2007-8, we developed an eight plans for each of the identified issues. For instance, the whole ICT challenges. We've developed an ICT blueprint. We're working together with the Department of Public Service and Administration, as well as the Department of Communications. As we are talking now, we have about 42 centers that are currently connected with internet, telecom, all the connectivity issues. So we've developed a blueprint, and they are connected, and we are continuing to connect them. The other issues, because of the challenges with service delivery at the centers, the leases and the like, we've developed service level agreements, and at the local level, the municipalities are driving that, and the tenants are actually signing the service level agreements. We developed a memorandum of understanding around the service standards and the like that are being applied at the centers. We've developed some guidelines for private-public partnerships, which are being used at the centers, especially if there are other non-government or the business partners that are interested in working there. We have developed some human HR strategic and framework, monitoring and evaluation framework and standards. We have developed those things and we are implementing them. Just also give you some indication that for the last quarter, from October to March, when we did an analysis, we found that more than 3 million transactions actually happened in those centers. And I need to say that we had received reports from about 85 centers at the time of the 127 centers that were there. And when we did an analysis, we found that there was about 355 transactions happening at a center today. That is an average. So there is growing number of services in the centers, and we are definitely addressing these challenges. But just to add to what the CEO said, the Treasury is working on the review. We are also asking the whole location of the program, the whole funding of the program, all those critical salient issues around the sustaining and running the program. And when I say about coordinating, even at national, provincial, and local level, so we're focused on all those things. The centers, as they are, I don't have the stats because I would have loved to say 4 in Limpopo, 5 in the like, but they are all, most of them are actually in the deep rural areas. And that's the idea.
Yeah, but remember, thank you for that question. I think that it's quite a fundamental one to be able to answer what has changed over the past 9 years. And we will invite members, and incidentally, the minister asked us the same question, member, this morning. We'll ask members to actually, as you go back to your constituencies, check these centers. And when you come back here, you can actually give us your own feedback about how you think they're operating. But thank you for the question. Can you ask, maybe you can answer the question better about why we understand by trusting me.
Thank you, Chair. I think the figure there is more or less misleading. It's actually money that has been spent. I think government or GCIS is actually operating on a cash basis. That 7.4 million is actually commitments of the campaign that was stretching over to March 31st. So we then couldn't finalize the payment because some of the advertisements had not been flighted. The second amount, I think a number of government departments have had to get budget cuts for the coming years. I think you would note in one of the slides we said that there's a 10 million, 12 million budget cut. So we had to think creatively because generally the opening of Parliament for this current year was going to be two events. And we had a budget for the one event. So some of the money was actually projected savings which emanate from the property management, from the electricity saving measures that we had introduced. I think in the past year, we've actually realized that we have managed to reduce a lot of our electricity bill by introducing certain measures, and that has resulted in some savings that we have acquired. Secondly, some of the saving in that 4 million was as a result of some of the vacancies, very small amount, which was because of some of the resignations in between a month or two, and the salaries that actually accumulate. So if you note that 4 million is more or less consistent, it's less than 1%. It's less than 1% of our overall budget. So we then had to engage with Treasury early February to actually get an approval to use that projected saving for some of the activities that we were to do in the following year. But we actually realized that there will be this 10 million budget cut in our current financial year. Thanks.
Yes, I see we're running out of time. Let me quickly deal with the outstanding questions. One about the brave and the sonar. Remember, every time we publish Vuvuzenzele magazine, there's a brave version of it. So every time we do it. So we're not going to start with sonar, but it's something that we do all the time. And we're just mentioning it here that we'll do it again when we popularize the sonar thing. And that's part of our commitment to make sure that as we communicate with the public, nobody is left out, both the disabled and the visually impaired. So that's what we do. So we can give you copies of that to look at. The next question was member from the back. Two questions. Explaining the new structure to the public. We normally issue what we call faces of government. I'm sure members would have seen that. We're producing that poster. We still have to finalize the photographs of the various ministers, the new ministers appointed. But that poster is coming out, and it will explain the new structure. And we distribute that to literally every part of the country, targeting schools, clinics, and hospitals. So that's going to be done. I think the pictures will be finalized hopefully by the end of next week, and then from there we'll look at distribution. Remember, feedback from the citizens an important part of what we do, because we believe communication is not just one way. We need to get feedback. So what we do, when, for instance, we distribute from time, not all the time, but from time to time, when we distribute the 1.6 million copies of Vuvuzenzele, we normally do a survey to ask people, is this what you want to read in the magazine, or what else do you want to know about, so that when we publish the next copy, we get feedback. But also the important platforms that we use, such as Izimbizo, where we get communities to come and tell government. Government comes to a community and says, this is what we've achieved, this is what we're going to do, but what do you want to see government doing? So we get feedback from that. We also arrange for ministers to participate in talk shows on radio stations and community radio stations, and get ministers to interact directly with the public so that we get feedback about what people think about what government is doing. So it's a lot of those kinds of things. But linking your question, member from the back, with the chair's question about the hotline, that's exactly what the president is actually trying to say, that we need to find a better way of getting government to listen to what people are saying out there. So, Chair, you're spot on once again. The President did say there will be a hotline, so the Minister once again this morning has actually given us that task to finalize a proposal about how such a hotline could be established and how will it work. But you're spot on when you're saying that it's a brilliant idea that could falter if there isn't a system behind it. And that's what the minister was asking us to do, to work out a proposal about how exactly such a hotline will work. And so working on the proposal, and we should be able to share it within the next week or two about how it could function. Structured relations, Chair, with the other state agencies like SABC and post offices, we generally tend to have very good relations with many both state and non-state agencies around the country. But at this stage, the relationship does not extend to, for instance, us agreeing with SABC that they will do this and that. But we have good relations with all the journalists within the SABC to make sure that we, not just SABC, but all media actually, to make sure that we give them access to information. If they need to do a story, we even from time to time, you know, mention stories that they could cover, and they end up covering those stories. But that, we believe, is a product of very good relations between GCIS, government communicators, and media houses, including SABC. Because if relations are good, chances are that we are able to put proposals on the table and they actually implement some of those ideas. If we feel very strongly about a particular idea, we then understand that from time to time we might have to pay for it, and that's why, for instance, we ran a campaign on economic opportunities, went to the SABC, we put a proposal on the table, we got our departments to contribute money, and we actually paid for it because we thought it was important for us to run a campaign on economic opportunities. But we actually had to pay for that particular one. But we do have good relations with all media houses. Post offices...
also use them as distribution points. Yeah, there is an agreement with the post office to use them as a distribution point for government.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what we are doing at the particular point in time. But again, the point, post offices points in almost each and every corner of the country. If there's an additional relationship we can have with them, we can look at that, and the committee can suggest about how we could actually do that. We don't have anything structured at this stage with the post office. Chair, I think that covers all the questions. Thank you.
Is that going to the team? Minister, you want to say something?
Yeah, just maybe a comment on two issues. The first is with regard to the toll-free number. The question was, where should it be located? Who should manage it? It's a very important question to deal with, and that is why the GCIS would not have, in its original mandate, jumped for it, even if it had been raised. Because unless it has given specific instructions as to what to do, we have been exploring that. We should call that the GCIS is not a presidential entity. It's not a structure which services the president. It's a structure which services the entire government of the world. And we need to find a way as to how we deal with that. We have been doing, as they said, that I did raise the question. What is it that is available in any government institution of this nature? For example, you'll find there are toll-free numbers which are run, either in the police, anti-corruption line, hotline, and so on and so forth. It's important for us to understand the experience which has been gained in running those things. What are the challenges which we are likely to face? What are the problems which people have encountered? What should be the scale of it? How much should it be IT-based? For example, should it be SMS? Should it be just voice? Do you want an email type? But what type, to what extent should it do? If you put in a system, what should be its capability to track, maybe to forward a problem to a particular center, a particular department, and actually trace and track the response, and probably communicate that response either back to the client or the person who is the originator of the message, or to the person or to the machine or to whatever, which is an intermediate to sort out where the message should go. So there are those type of things. So it's not something which you can immediately say, no, this is what we're going to implement, because even if it's toll free, but there's a cost to it, which will have to be incurred in order to set it up. And so it's important for us to go through all those motions, but we want to go as fast as we can to ensure that we're able to sort out the issues. We are hopeful that probably within a short space of time we'll have an idea of what is it that is available currently in government, what is it that has been done, and how much we think it may cost us to do that. And then we can then begin to do the necessary procedures to procure the services which we'll need in order to do that. The second point I wanted to comment on is, you see, when we're dealing with the splitting of the departments, there was a very interesting debate as to why we're taking the fish out of the water. You see, when you split, you take fisheries to agriculture, but they're moving environment to water affairs. So the debate was, why don't you leave the fisheries with water affairs? Because in any case, the fish lives in water. Now it's a logical, empirical analysis of a problem, or provision of a solution to the problem which you face. But the reality is, you would never find a situation where you don't have overlap in government functions. You see, government functions originally is one. And that is why the executive authority is vested in the president. Because it's one government, it's one, you are basically dealing with one institution. If it does not be for purposes of specification to ensure that we specialize, we make sure that we are able to deal with all the aspects which are related to government, it could basically be run by one person with the executive authority. But in order to exercise those functions, you then get an executive committee of members who assist you. It's at that point that you begin to separate these functions. And as you begin to separate, you realize that there are a lot of overlaps in the way, which makes it very difficult to be so clinical that you'll never find an overlap on one or the other. And it's important for us, especially if you deal with a transversal function like communication, you will always find a situation where you have to deal with programs, which if you look at them in their original form could easily be dealt with in a particular department. But you'll find them have to be dealt with at a transversal level. And you'll find overlap not only on the budget only, but also on the activities. I'm raising it so that we don't make a commitment, which probably may mislead the committee, to say we are going to completely move progress, which let's say the 16 days, to the new Ministry of Women. Because it's not it may be coordinated there, but it's not a campaign which generally should be run there. It should be a government-wide campaign. So if an angry stakeholder from municipalities, from state-owned institutions, if we're functioning well, all of us, at that point in time, we need to put all our efforts, all our resources to ensure that we accomplish that. And in that context, we'll then find that DCIS plays at the center of government as a communication tool, or the instrument which government used to communicate with people. You are likely to find DCIS playing a very critical role. Even if you have a campaign located or coordinated in a particular ministry, but for communication purposes, DCIS might be having a better capacity to do that type of communication on behalf of government as a whole. So it will be important for us from time to time to understand that the role which DCIS will play. It might from time to time seem to be crossing the bounds of what it's supposed to do, but it's because it is sometimes very difficult to get a clear-cut line as to what should be the campaign which we should run, which we should support, or which we should provide resources to do on behalf of the state or on behalf of specific departments. That leads me to the last point which I wanted to deal with. I think it's a point which has been raised earlier on in the earlier set of questions. How do we coordinate government communication within the three spheres, both vertically and horizontally? How do we manage that? It's an area which may become elusive from time to time. If we understand if we take into account the objective and the purpose of communication at the various years and also horizontal by various departments. And I think it would not necessarily be a good thing for us to chase that you need this uniform communication. I think what we must try to achieve is to see all this variety of communication authorities as a resource through which government can communicate program and strive for better coordination and coherence of messages without wanting to exercise control of how they need to perform or what type of messages they need to turn out. As long as we can be able to ensure that there's better coordination and there's coherence in the type of messages we're trying to give, I think for us that should be the best we should hope for. The other way around may be quite difficult. if you understand the politics of communication, it may be quite a difficult area to achieve, and I don't think it's a target which we can meet at any stage. I don't think it will be possible to do that too. It will become more complex actually to try and arrive at that. And as I said, I think the best thing we could do is to work towards a more coherent and coordinated communication between the various centers of communication in government. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think you've had a good set of questions and fairly detailed responses. Can we take a 10-minute break? Because we've got, I think, two more presentations to come. So we're going to break ourselves for a bit of a long working session. We will try and finish with... Okay, so how are you? Welcome. This is the INC.
INC,
alright. Welcome to the team. Are you heading up to this delegation? We'll hand over you to introduce your team. And most of the members are new to this committee, so I'm also going to ask themselves to introduce so that you get to know some of them. Welcome to you. We've asked for short presentations, as you might have heard, and then so that we can spend more time talking to you. Good.
Just by means of an explanation of what I'm doing here, because I'm actually a board member, and the IMC was using an acting CEO for the last 10 months who resigned just before the end of March. He was also the CEO of SA Tourism, and the board summarily decided that I was the person most likely to take over the responsibility. I think that's got to do with the fact that I'm one of the few self-employed individuals around, and I've also been on the journey since the very beginning, in 2001. Just by show of hands, Jerry, if I could ask, how many people have any background on the workings? I know you are from before, but are any of the other members familiar with any of the works of the IMC, the International Marketing Council? Okay, that's fine. I need to use some of the members. Old committee. A new old committee. Okay. What we're going to show you today, you've had a very thorough document that you've had an opportunity to look at. And in so doing, Chair, do you want to go to the other introductions or do you want to?
Just introduce themselves and then you can take over.
Okay.
Not certain. I'm still learning technology. It's Kumbuzo Eric Bongingosi, Colon is my surname, a member of the ANC deployed to the Portfolio Committee of Communication.
Good afternoon. My name is Trevor Bonham. I'm from KZN, a place called Durban. I'm deployed here as an ANC member to this committee. Thank you.
Langalakem Kiza, from ANC.
Mutikima Kazi, from the ANC.
Muta Kazi, IFP.
Just for this, I want to ask why are we only introducing ourselves now, because I'm Stone Age. Yeah. Story Murutla.
Judy Killian, come.
Fully supporting the GCIS.
Thank you, Chair, for that. It's very useful. I just want to introduce a couple of terms. Today we're going to cover off some introductory notes. We're going to talk about why brand a nation in the first place. We're going to talk about the journey that the South African nation brand has traveled on, why we have taken it as a responsibility, together with GCI, to go through a review of what, in fact, IMC does, what the mandate should actually be, and what implications that has had for the business plan and the strategic plan that you've been circulated with before. And I'm going to give you highlights of what the major structural shifts will be in terms of that plan as such. And then we'll give adequate time for questions and answers at the end. So just by means of a couple of terms, just because everyone's familiar with the word brand management, managing brands, and if Paul, you put up the first slide, you can just go over there. You know about these brands. When you see Apple, you know, think different. You think Nike. It gets across an attitude. You know what it means. It says something. It owns a space in your mind. There's another term we're going to use today as well, which is reputation management. That's a more holistic management of what people feel normally about a corporation, but increasingly about countries. And reputations are one of those things that they're very slow to earn, but very quick to lose if one does the wrong thing. So we've got to be very cautious, and we're going to introduce that term about the management of the reputation of brand South Africa during the presentation today. So you know about these type of brands. But when I put these brands up, things come into your mind. So when you see the Union Jack, you probably think tradition. You probably think historical theme park. You probably see the British Lions, absolutely. When you think the Stars and Stripes of America, you possibly think the land of the free. And you may increasingly associate that with the leader of that particular brand. And your attitude towards Brand USA may well have shifted over the last 10 years according to the nature of the leader that was actually driving that particular, representing that country. If you look at brand in the bottom left, that's Germany. Germany, if I tell you Germany, you'll all know quality, and you'll probably give me Mercedes and BMW and Audi. But in 2006, they used exactly that idea to broaden the thinking about Germany by land of ideas, and they introduced the concept that Germany had made creative innovations over their life. On the bottom right-hand side, Brazil. Brazil is a country which is fascinating because you won't necessarily have one idea, but you have this sort of samba thought, this sort of lifestyle thought, and it's driven by the icons that are Brazil, be they Pelé at one level or the Copacabana at the other level. In fact, it may surprise you to know that Brazil's got every social challenge, economic challenge, infrastructural challenge that we've got and some, but you just don't know about that. They've managed very cleverly to cover it up as such. Why do nations do this? Well, it's quite interesting that some of that branding is covert, some is overt. So there was a tour recently done which demonstrated how nations work very strongly in the area of branding. So, for example, in the USA, they have regular free press briefings, media briefings. They're very controlled, and everyone stays on message. Interesting learning. In the UK, they actually have a grid. And there's a grid about issues and about messages, and you do not leave the grid. No matter who you are, be you the humblest of public servants, be you the leader of the nation, you stay on the grid. We've spoken about Brazil and the icons. Australia, what is one of the things they use? Well, except for the last couple of days, they generally use their ability of sport to play above their so-called size of a nation and such. So Australia uses the metaphor of sport very strongly. Tunisia, one of the things we learned there, they are so obsessed about competitiveness, which is quite an interesting thought, they now increasingly scan the world to hire the best people. Quite fascinating that they've gone all out in that area. Why are we concerned about this? Well, the first thing is, it is an increasingly competitive world. There is no organic growth at the moment, except possibly in the area of population. The fact of the matter is, when it comes to GDP growth, when it comes to exports, when it comes to tourism, when it comes to skills, there is only so much going. How are you going to win in that situation? You've got to increase your competitiveness. You've got to take market share, which means we've got to fight this a little bit harder. Because what properties do we own at the moment? And if I was to put up, you would probably give us these things. And there's a very important defining one, top left, 1994. Probably the event that most defines the position in the mind that South Africa occupies in most of the world. The first country to ever pull off a free and fair and peaceful democratic election and not transcend into the area of internal conflict. But also we own other icons. We own Madiba. We own Table Mountain, where we're sitting now. And over time, it's no doubt that we will own something important in 2010. And one of the things we're going to talk to today quite a lot is the positioning or the opportunity that 2010 presents to be our next 1994. It gives us the opportunity to put a new milestone in and redefine what we are to the world. And think about that in the context of being increasingly competitive in the world. The chance to show the world what we can do, what the possibility actually is, and to redefine ourselves as such. Let's track a brief history of the South African brand. If we go back to 1994, I think it was Bishop Tutu who coined the expression the Rainbow Nation. It's a great metaphor, except it had a downside, because rainbows occur as a consequence of unique things that tend to be fairly ephemeral. They don't last for long. And sadly, by 1999, we have discovered that we were no longer in the positive side, the high side of the news. We actually were beginning to get the wrong type of news about us that was making the front pages. So we decided, unless we take control of our own destiny, the media of the world will begin to position the nation for us. We can't have that happen. That was the time when the Millennium Goals were coming through, and at that point in time, in fact, the IMC was formed, just into the new century as such, with the mandate to manage the communication that went out about brand South Africa, to market brand South Africa. We'll talk about that, how that's refined. What's happened over that period of time, since 2009, we've progressed nicely, but we've come to a tipping point where we're ready to accelerate to the next phase. And what we'll talk about shortly is why the world is an interesting place tonight in global recession for us to be competitive even more. What we see going forward is as follows. If we look far ahead, we see the opportunity to create, dare I call it, a first division world-class nation. We're going to be up there in, if you will, excuse the football metaphor, the premiership of nations. Arguably at the moment, we're down in the sort of Handball League, or in England it would be the championship, or whatever it happens to be. We want to get there. But to do that, we have to use a couple of levers. And we think the most critical lever is the proof point that is 2010. And you will see how we will put a lot of focus on this year, making 2010 a leverage point into the future as such. And then obviously we will celebrate 20 years of democracy with the concept of the rising star and moving towards that vision.
Okay.
All right, let's move forward beyond that. And as I said to you before, that was how the IMC came into being, to help manage this particular process. So that's the IMC in place as such there. And just again, for information, the IMC is a trust. It has actually got 35 board members or trustees as such, and it has been operating now for, I think, 7 years. And
as we speak at the moment, we've probably got about 15 to 20 trustees who've come off the board and are still very strong brand South Africa advocates and stuff. We've produced a lot of work. I don't think we've got time, Chair, to go through all the work. Some of you will be familiar with some of the advertisements that we've got, and we can make all of these available to you on DVD so you can watch them. There's the Rhythm of the Nation, which really, if you remember the advertisement, it's about you think you're looking at the world, but it's actually looking at elements of South Africa. And it's there, again, to demonstrate our competitiveness as such. We've also produced a whole lot of print collateral, and I'm sure you've seen the South African story. You're familiar, if you've traveled in London, with the taxi campaign that we've run for the last 4 or 5 years, special features we've done around Davos and Time magazine, and a number of topical advertisements we've done to celebrate when particular important events actually occur. We've also got a web presence, which is very strong in that area. But what I want to do now is really talk about why we have decided to review our situation. What happened effectively, about a year ago, GCIS suggested it was time to have a review. You know, this body has been in place for 7 years. Let's take a look at whether the mandate, as originally decided, is still the mandate as being correct. And we went through quite a robust process, and I'll tell you some of the details of that. And at one time, there was even some conversation about whether IMC and SA Tourism should in fact be combined, whereas in fact we collaborate, and we'll tell you how we do that later. The second thing that obviously happened on the left-hand side, there was a study of the best practice worldwide done of which nations are marketing themselves well, in what way, and with what techniques can we learn from that. In addition, on the left-hand side, there was an impending change of government, which meant there was going to be a new attitude to the whole concept of nation brand reputation. On the right-hand side, there was the global economic turmoil, which we believe presents an opportunity insofar that it has leveled a lot of the playing field, and our ability to be able to rebound, I think, will affect our competitors. That takes us to the next one, which is that we undertook a very in-depth competitiveness study. We looked at the 12 indices worldwide, the World Economic Forum for Human Talent Index, and we understood that South Africa's primary metrics were dropping. And that worried us, because some of those are based on intrinsics, but a lot of them are based on perception. We can only work in the perception area. We can't work in the intrinsic area. But hopefully we can influence and persuade some of the policymakers to do some work on some of the areas of the intrinsics can be strengthened as well. But the other thing that was uplifting about the competitiveness study, Chair, was that it showed us when we looked at case studies how relatively simple it is to do certain things correctly. So you can borrow from brands like Brazil, brands like Australia, brands like Dubai. And then finally, on the right-hand side, the reason for the review was the 2010 World Cup. We believe very strongly that we weren't taking the optimal advantage of using that. What did the review say, just very quickly? It said, please refocus your mandate. It said, please bring in tighter performance management measures. Be more strategic, less activation. Focus on your key stakeholders. If I can introduce an idea into the back of your mind, we're a bit like a brand franchise. But we're a virtuous and inspirational franchise. We're not like McDonald's. If you're being a bad brand at the moment, I can't come and smack you and say that you're being a bad brand. I can only inspire you to be better.
Speak on me.
What's you're sitting closer. Okay, sorry.
You're being a bad brand.
But the fact of the matter is, we are, if you will, we are selling a franchise. We can only take our message to market to other people. We can't take it ourselves. We don't have the money to promote ourselves the whole time. So we have to inspire other people to be the brand as such. They also said to us, please take a look at your legal form, because there are certain areas in the change of legislation that may make a trust inappropriate from a funding point of view. They said also, please review the board's role and the board's composition. I'm doing that at the moment. It's quite a fascinating task to, you've got to look at certain very powerful individuals and say whether they should be on the board or not. I'm only going to make recommendations, not making decisions. They also said you have country managers out there in the way of UK and the USA. Review that. The CRC, Communication Research Centre, was to be migrated to GCIS. We had relationship challenges, and I think, Temby, you won't mind me saying, but I think over the last couple of years, there have been some relationship challenges, which I think we've gone a huge distance to overcoming those things. And then obviously out of that, we've got to make sure we've got the right structure, the right resources, and even, dare I say, the right name. Because you go into any meeting and you say to somebody, you're from the IMC, and they sort of look at you blindly and say, so there's other terms in government that are IMC, for example. And then you say, no, brand South Africa, and they get it. So one of the logical areas would be, well, just let's call ourselves brand South Africa. So that sounds too obvious, but we may go there. Just the next point and the key point, just to demonstrate this one, was that it also said one of the main roles is conceptualization, articulation, delivery, and management, and which ones you do on your own and which ones you collaborate with other shareholders. And to the point earlier about the slight confusion about what is SA Tourism, what is DTI, we create or try to create an environment conducive to SA Tourism doing their work easier, to DTI doing their work easier. We sometimes have to handle the difficult stuff. When issues need to be managed, we'll sit with DTI and say, how are we going to handle the communication around, for example, a xenophobia situation? What damage can that do to the reputation if we don't handle it properly? So we work in an enabling environment, if you will. And that just shows very quickly how we collaborate on that one. The process we went through to review the plans was as follows. We first of all took the, by the way, at the same time as we were doing the review, GCIS also did their review as well. And the two reviews came together in a planning meeting. There were a series of workshops with the main businesses that IMC collaborates with, DTI, DSA as was, now IRC, and SA Tourism, TISA, and we, out of that, we then took it into a management team, and we totally revisited the business plan. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The first thing we looked at, and this went to the board on the 6th of May, was in fact the mandate of the IMC, and I'll take you through the old one and the changes in a minute, but this is what the mandate basically says at the moment. We used to put at the top, it's our responsibility to create jobs. We can't do that. We can create an environment conducive to those things occurring by managing the reputation of the brand that is South Africa. That change has come in. And the second thing is we've recognized that in this world in which we live, it's about competitiveness. So we've said now our succinct mandate is to build South Africa's nation brand reputation in order to improve South Africa's global competitiveness. Very succinct, very simple. It's about the brand, and it's about making it more competitive. How do we do that? Three areas. One is to develop and articulate the value proposition and positioning that will drive the long-term brand. Now, those might be buzzwords, and I'm sorry about that, but the concept of a value proposition is really what you say about yourself. So, for example, when Japan was on the growth curve, their words were, we'll make the best quality products in the world at great prices. And that was the value proposition, very simple in that area. The concept of positioning is a space you want to own in people's minds. So when I say to you, Germany, you say quality. The question is, what is it that is South Africa's value proposition? And what is it that's the space that we want to own? At the moment, we're probably known as the nation that shifted into a peaceful, democratic area. But we haven't yet made that resonate in terms of, what does that mean for me as a businessman? What does that mean for me as a tourist? We happen to be getting tourists, but have we yet articulated? And we think we've got to work very strongly on that area. The second dimension of that, and also, don't forget, that will be very much informed by the national vision. And we were advised recently that process to develop an overarching national vision is in play.
The second thing is in this whole area of really developing the social cohesion. And that's about building pride and building patriotism among South Africans with the intention of uniting the nation. And the thinking we're thinking about there is, if you imagine a business whereby you're not selling Coca-Cola or bottled water. You're selling a concept, which is a service, which is a brand. Mm. You've got to sell through your people. We have got to sell through each and every person who thinks of themselves as a South African. And that's the critical area there. And what we think we've got to do is actually define South Africanness, which is a very exciting but quite a frightening concept, because it's a lengthy discussion to see how we articulate that. Why are we doing this? Ultimately, to increase South Africa's global competitiveness by developing partnerships that are symbiotic in their nature with all the stakeholders who deliver on and leverage the national brand and leverage them to enhance the reputation. That means working with government departments at national, provincial,
and it may be local level. It means working with civil society. It means working with corporate South Africa, SMEs in South Africa. It means trying to align the nation, but it also means aligning under leadership. And I think one of the things that we're really looking forward to is having a leader in the form of the president who really aligns himself behind the brand that is South Africa as well. So this is what we're suggesting as the mandate. This is where it comes from in terms of the transition. So before we would develop and implement a proactive and coordinated international marketing communication strategy, now it's more about the specifics, the value proposition and the positioning. The second one is about contributing towards job creation by encouraging local and foreign investment, etc., etc. Now it's about increasing our competitiveness with view to an environment conducive to job creation. And the third point is to build local support for brand and private competitiveness. We're pretty much staying with that one because we very much value that we have to work through our people. Okay, how does our business plan work? Basically, the mandate informs the way we do business. That breaks itself down into objectives, which you've seen in the document, both in terms of the business plan and the strategic plan, and that then breaks down further into a number of strategies, a tangible way we actually do some things and how we achieve our objectives. This was the old plan, but if you've been here, and Chair, you were here at the time when we approved it last time, at the top level it said our mandate was to sustainable GDP growth and sustainable job creation. Our vision was to be globally competitive, and there were objectives in terms of the brand awareness, brand ranking, and world-class organization, and the strategies were underneath. We've shifted it slightly. Now, the operating context, what we're trying to assist is GDP growth, job creation, and social cohesion. I think that's a very important addition that we've put into that area there, and in due course, obviously, the national vision. But our goal is to build that nation brand reputation to improve our competitiveness. That's the contribution the IMC makes to the business that is South Africa Incorporated. We alone cannot make jobs. We alone cannot grow the economy. But we can create an environment conducive to those things actually occurring. And our vision, now we've been more specific. There are particular studies that we use as a reference point. One is the World Economic Forum. Happening as we speak in Asia. The danger of using that as a sole measure, it's very much intrinsic based. As we said before, we can't control all the intrinsics, but we would love to be rated as a top 30 global nation within the World Economic Forum. We're sitting in the 40s at the moment and we're slipping. So we have some work to do in that area. There's a study called the Anholt Nation Branding Study, which looks at more variables in terms of reputation and branding, and at the moment we're sitting in the 30s, and we believe we can get into the top 20. We believe we can get into the first division of nations by the year 2020. And how are we going to do that? We're going to use our annual reputation index ranking, we're going to achieve our annual competitiveness ranking, and we're going to continue to be a cutting-edge organization. But the specific strategies are about brand strategy development and management, reputation management, which is particularly through the tool of communication. So, for example, this morning, I spent with Minister Rob Davis, we spent 2 hours with a lot of the members of the media, just talking about the brand and talking about the country and trying to shift the narrative into a more positive state, ready for this quantum growth that we've spoken about. And that type of management of the media on a proactive basis is a very important one. Brand intelligence and performance management, we think very strongly we have a lot of information, but we very rarely put it into a way which actually is a form of intelligence. We tend to use it on an ad hoc basis, not good enough. Stakeholder and partner alignment integration, crucial. We sell through others. We have got to actually even reorientate, we'll see later, reorientate our organization to be able to service the needs of effectively what are our customers. So when we sit down with international relations and we sit down with trade industry, they are our customers. We have to help them create their routes to market. And organizational development is always the last one there. We've got to become a stronger, sharper, more proficient organization. Excellent. Okay, so what does that mean in terms of strategic shifts? We used to spend a lot of time actually doing ads, and we've produced some wonderful, wonderful ads. But when sometimes you flight an ad overseas and on the following page is a story of some xenophobic or
cholera type of situation, it tends to neutralize what you've achieved. It's also very expensive. So we will probably move away from that type of continuous international advertising, more towards being more of a strategic brand consultancy. Secondly, we had a very tight focus on our stakeholders. We really only focus on trade and industry and SA tourism. We're going to broaden it. We need to engage with arts and culture. We need to engage with civil society. We need to engage across the spectrum. We need to basically empower all of these bodies to be our brand ambassadors out there. Thirdly, as I said before, we were intuitive before, but we need to be intelligence-based now in our decision-making. Fourthly, we were a functionally based structure. We did advertising. Now we need to be a resource structure which reflects a stakeholder function, focused very strongly. Extension of the principles is as follows. We started running Movement for Good, a values-based civil society advertising campaign. We want to up the tempo there and make it specifically orientated towards the 2010 campaign that effectively creates a hosting environment conducive to creating a great event of world-class ability. We were advertising driven or international. I think we'll now be more media management. It'll be about sitting down with The Economist and the editors and the key people there and similar publications, Al Jazeera, whatever it happens to be, and getting them to take a slightly different look at South Africa. And we will obviously be stakeholder driven internationally as well. And our board, which has been very much what we would term symbolic, people were almost called international service. We want to get it to a more functional, and we use the term agile, which upset some of the members. They thought they might have to go to gym and Pilates and things like that. But the term agile is in the way that they sort of are able to behave, and that's one of our goals there. But we don't want to lose the people who have been on this journey. And the idea is to create a broader bunch of patrons who still live and breathe, and maybe once a year we get together, and even we maybe work with them in subcommittees as such. So the sort of shifts we're talking about, as I said before, we were known for doing ongoing consumer and opinion leader advertising. What we'll probably do now is more occasional and tactical. So for example, when President Obama celebrated his inauguration with a bottle of Graham Beck sparkling wine, we ran an ad. Because that's great. That's wonderful that America chose to use a South African sparkling wine rather than a French champagne as such. We'll celebrate those moments if we think they need exaggerate it a bit. We tended to manage the media through ad hoc and often reactive engagement. We're going to go the other way. We're going to go proactively, like we did this morning, and start engaging with the media. Because the media, one learns over the years, you can't just turn them on like a tap. You've actually got to work with them, and then the bad times can be handled because you've got a good relationship working with them. And we're very happy there. We've actually appointed a new service provider who are really good in this area of unlocking the power of the media. The third point is that we tended to do international missions and ad hoc media missions. So we'd send a group of people over to various countries and bring in other people here. We now are going to be much more carefully orchestrating ongoing visits to South Africa. You need to feel this country. It's got to come here. So we're going to take the opportunity during the Confederation Cup, strangely, not to take people with football matches. They'll come here to feel the buzz of the football. They'll see a game. But they're going to be here visit some of our facilities, some of our infrastructure, talk to our people, understand our culture, and they're going to go back with very different angles, very positive stories about South Africa. And then the last one on this particular page, we used the concept called global South Africans. They were, what was the term we heard this morning? It was economic immigrants or something, or migrants. There's some extraordinary South Africans working around the world that want to help create jobs, create investment. We need to harness those people in an organized and integrated manner, rather than just ad hoc phoning them when we want them. Domestically, I think it's the next one. How are we doing on time, yeah? Getting back, okay. We're almost at the end. We're going to shift from being inspirational, largely generic, to more tactical, opportunistic. We're going to be more focused on 2010. We're going to be more proactive in our media management. And we're going to be more orchestrated and integrated with our civil society and our business engagement program. We've got some very interesting ideas that are going to actually move in that direction. This probably sums up what holds the brand back in the past. At the moment, you can see business, government, and civil society almost working in three spheres. We need them to work together, and they gave us a gift, and it's called 2010. And we need to use this gift that is 2010 to create this bridge, to create that synergy and alignment.
Because what will happen, it will end up looking a bit like this. We, as we said before, we disseminate our messages with GSCIS through government, through business, through civil society. But we need them to integrate with each other as well. And our job is to try and affect that integration. We talk to a broad range of, we won't go through them all, but it's a broad list of all the target markets we talk to. So I want to just look at the next one, because this will show the emphasis. Over this particular year, at the top line, you'll see there, it's about mobilizing the nation. And that's going to be the drive as we lead into and through 2010. After that, that will reduce slightly, and the focus there will be on lift the brand. You've defined the brand, now lift the brand. Our international, we've been preparing the ground. We will keep preparing. We'll keep talking to the media. We'll keep talking to the stakeholders. But we'll probably look for a relaunch platform post-2010. And that will be a very powerful way to go. And then our underlying principles, our intelligence, our value proposition, et cetera, et cetera, at the bottom. We are producing already a series of new TV ads, but I'm not going to show you any of those because we haven't got the sound lined up, unfortunately. But what I want to do is almost like, I want you just to go away with this thought in your mind, is that if you see 1994 as the first major defining moment that created this nation, 2010 potentially can be the next defining moment that creates the springboard for the next phase of growth. We've turned it, if you will, South Africa the next big thing. It's not a chaos line. Please don't worry. It's not going to appear on bumpers. It's not the bumper stickers. It's not a line you're going to learn. It's a space. We want the world to look at South Africa almost in the way they've traditionally been looking recently at Brazil, at Russia, at India, at China. We want BRICS to become BRICS, if we can. We want them to look at it. So over 2009, you'll see there, it'll be about mobilization, it'll be about alignment, it'll be about intelligence, and it'll be about preparation. Why? Because 2010 is the proof of this possibility that we've spoken about. After that, it's very much a relaunch platform. We'll do that through 5 strategies we spoke before, and I'm not going to go in detail through what those strategies are. We're going to now just cut through, and I'm just going to hand to Paul McKenzie, who will talk very briefly through the metrics and the budget area, and then I'll close off with some of the implications we need to discuss.
Afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Just in terms of the budget, this slide is just to show you some of the history, which is the baseline budget that's been approved. We've been growing as an organization from about 111 million in 2007, going up to 172 in the 2010 year. That's largely, of course, because of the 2010 event, and there are quite a few items that are specific to 2010, and then it's reducing again once those items are taken out after 2010 to about 142 million. It was 147, as Paul mentioned earlier, the Communications Resource Center, which was a office of the INC based in Pretoria, that's now been migrated to the GCIS. So those amounts are, have been taken out of the INC budget. That's just history how our funds were divided in the past. It was it used to be organized around target groups. And now in the new strategy, it's organized around the 5 strategies which Paul outlined: brand management, reputation management, intelligence, stakeholder and organizational development, still working within the approved baselines. And then that's just to show you the split between the global and the domestic situation. You'll see, if you look at the percentages on global, it's been going up from 43%, 48%, 52%, 48%, and then if you remember the diagram of the international reducing as we get towards 2010, going down to 22% and then expanding again. And that's because we're refocusing on the domestic mobilization leading up to 2010. So the same thing, if you look on the domestic, the percentages there is growing 27, 25, 30, and then going up to 53% and then coming down again after 2010 as we start expanding internationally again. and that's just our materiality and significance levels, which are 0.5% of the total budgets for the year.
Okay, this is just sort of closing off now. As we said before, one of the key things is that we have a very small organization. We are only 30, how many people are studying?
20 at the
moment. 20 at the moment, goodness. We are going through a process of reconstructing ourselves through a proper organizational development process to make sure we become client-facing, and that will be absolutely critical. The second, and as part of that, by the way, we also review some of our subscribers as well. Secondly, some of the resources,
We'll be redefining our positions and our KPAs. As it is at the moment, we're outstanding two key positions. I'm an acting CEO, and I'm also effectively acting chief market officer. So at the moment, we've got a couple of acting and feels quite theatrical there, so we'll try and improve on that by filling them properly. We've got certain key positions. We have to assess our country management, how we manage that. We need to work much closer with international relationships. It makes a lot of sense to work with the embassies and the consulates much more closely. Organizational name, we've spoken about that already. Legal form, we're reviewing that. Our relationship with the executive authority, we're building a very strong and very, I think, good symbiotic interdependency. And I always think that's a great way because we understand our relative strengths. And to be quite frank, we need their guidance as to how to bring government departments into Brand South Africa as an idea. Our board composition we've spoken about. Source of funds is an area which is a potential big challenge and one that I'm personally going to address, hopefully. Over the years, GCIS has been virtually the sole funder. Other than some small bits of income on various things, although we are thinking in fact in terms of merchandise we could sell to that business. I don't think that's the core business that we're in. But it's interesting how many times you wear a South African shirt, somebody wants to buy from you. I don't see why we shouldn't get a royalty on that, but it's a wonderful thing to put it back in. But we have some thoughts, and one of the areas we've got a project lined up. Some of you will know that the Davos event happens in January each year, and one of the plans at the moment, quite far progressed, is to dominate Davos in January 2010. And that will be very much a public-private partnership, which we'll do on that one as well. So very, very exciting, and in fact, Mike Spicer wants to talk about it, but he's gone now to the other opening. So that's the sorts of fun. If we then move on, we also have a question back for government. And very much what we need is we need buy-in to this concept of nation branding at the very highest level. That means at the president's office itself. Because ultimately, as I said to you before, people have different views of America according to who's leading America. That was very much the personality of a George Bush or a Barack Obama. And it's quite fascinating how that has come through. We need a clearly articulated national vision. We need brand alignment for global power. I just want to give you an illustration on this one. It's not showing. Okay. Can anyone imagine how many people go out with logos overseas talking about we're from South Africa? If you think of the departments at national level, if you think of the departments at provincial level, you think of the corporates, you think of the tourism authorities, the arts and culture, there are literally hundreds of logos. One of the projects they're working on is to create a brand alignment in terms of what is it that encapsulates the logo. And it's obviously very closely based on the flag. And when we've got this through the process, which we're currently working through with GCIS, we will take this right through, hopefully, to the presidency and launch it as a national initiative on a symbolic occasion, which would be the ultimate way to go. What we're also looking for is participation, the formulation of the value proposition. We think it's important that government gets involved in defining what it is that we want to say about ourselves. We think we would love to see South Africa's brand and reputation as a standing item on the portfolio committee agendas because we think it's absolutely pivotal as to what it's all about. We want ministers and departments to align behind the brand. We want resources coordinated. We want our brand planning and the work of the new planning commission to come together. We want to explain to the ministry in question that having a great nation brand actually helps you build a great economic future. We want support for the post-2010 rebound, relaunch position we've spoken about, and ultimately that new look and feel that we were trying to get to. What can we do in return for all those wonderful questions that we're asking you? Hopefully, we can mobilize South Africans, initially to live the brand and become brand ambassadors. Secondly, we can define that positioning high ground. So when people see the South African flag, they will do the same as in the middle of Germany. They'll think of a thought, an idea, puts us in a competitive space. That's what we can do. Thirdly, we can define that value proposition. What is it we're offering the world? Fourthly, we can create the platform to become a top 20, a true premiership nation brand as such. We'll develop a communication strategy. We'll work on reputation management. We'll build collateral when it's required. We'll develop and help manage the brand identity of the corporate brand. And ultimately, we will align for global brand power. That's what we're going to try and do at the end.
I think ultimately what we're looking for is one country, one vision, one brand, and one team. That's all of us together. Ladies and gentlemen, I know I've indulged in your time, but I hope we've made it to some degree entertaining. We are open for discussion. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. Long presentation. You don't look convinced. Any questions? Magazi, and there.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, mine is just a short, you know, a short question on the composition. Can you remind me your name?
Paul Bannister.
Yeah, Paul. Let me call you Paul.
He might answer as well. He's also called Paul.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you said before you undertook, you know, the presentation, you had a discussion on the role of IMF. Why is not, I mean, IMF? Oh, yeah. So why is it IMF not combined with the tourism? And after that, you have talked about reviewing the processes, the current IMF, and you have just mentioned in one of your slides departments that have been participating, you know, in terms of doing the review. But when I looked at it, you have just left the Department of Arts and Culture. And for me, I think the Department of Arts and Culture is very crucial, because you see, South Africa were very unique, and in terms of our culture, our values, you know, our morals, we are very rich. So I think if you can also, you know, include them when you are doing the branding of South Africa. I think it was more of a comment, Chairperson.
I'd firstly like to thank you for the presentation, which I thought was a very good one. But in the way that you explain the involvement of the concept, it's very clear that we probably started off, I would think, wrongly, in the sense that your focus is really on business and trade. And I can understand that, because businessmen would be interested in those kind of things. But in the review and where you're going now, I would suggest we're going more in the right direction, which is really nation building, patriotism, and so on. Of course, they're more difficult to sell, but it seems to me that that's really the way to go, because that is where you're going to get ordinary people involved. You're not going to get ordinary people involved in the big trade issues, because clearly they're not going to be present in those areas. So I would just want to comment on that firstly. And then secondly, I would suggest that for me there's another fault line, insofar as you seem to concentrate too much at the national level. It's everything is the president and ministers and cabinet. There's no even role there for parliament, for example, which I would imagine, although you've mentioned the portfolio committees, but I mean parliament, the institution, the plenary downstairs, should really be one of the major role players in how we sell brand South Africa, in terms of our interaction, our nation building, our reconciliation, and so on. And then, of course, your other two levels of government, provincial and local. I mean, that's where you're going to get people involved. And that is the shift, you see, for me. The shift, as you've explained it, is that it's not your newspapers and your ads that are going to sell South Africa. It's ordinary people. It's what we do and how we project ourselves to the world. And so I just wanted to make those comments that I don't want to be critical, because I think you're already explaining how you are moving and evolving. And I just want to encourage that evolving, but I would want to say it should go deeper. And it has to include more and much deeper than just business on the one hand, and secondly, much deeper and more than just national government. It has to go down to the other level. So that's my comment here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. You won't imagine it, but I agree with Mr. De Lange. The point he made is very, very valid. But I think there's another thing, and in connection with Mr. De Lange, that what Paul Bannister said here today for us creates a sort of excitement in my heart. Because I think anything that anyone is doing to make South Africa a better place, it's very good. And if we can sort of implement all these things that Paul said, and every individual in South Africa buy in. Because if you can imagine, you phone your family in Australia that immigrated a year or two ago, and you as an individual say bad things about South Africa, that is counterproductive. And I think that's very important, to get this message to the ordinary individual in South Africa. And I've got an answer for Paul Bannister when he said, around South Africa, the next big thing. The answer is very easy when the DA win the next election, sir. Thank you.
It's going to take so long.
That's between 9,002.
I can't wait that long.
Maybe Mr. Bannister will have to wait forever. But
his hair is grey. I can't wait that long.
can I just ask? Firstly, thank you very much. It is actually very, very nice to listen to something that will make us all forget about our differences. I mean, coming from an election where we have sharpened our pencils and where we have identified the differences, it's nice to now also look beyond and to now say, what brings us together? What is the South Africanness that we want to build? Just one question. If I'm looking at the second last slide, and what is it that IMC is going to try and do for South Africa, I'm just not quite clear. If we think back to what the nations have become, have actually described as their position, are we going to, because South Africans are really crazy about sport, and we have the climate, we are a world within one country, yes, we have the cultures, and we have all of that, but should we not also position ourselves like in the soccer bit, sort of the main hub of Africa, and then the next growth point, I mean the competitiveness, what do we have? Yes, we have skills shortages, etc., but we have opportunities because we have a stable country, because we have a growing democracy. So what is it, all of that? I still feel I just need something that we need to define to make us unique as South Africa. And could we perhaps just hear what is that? As we indicated before, we could borrow some elements. But sometimes it is actually difficult. If you go for too many elements, then you lose your definition again. So where are we going to position ourselves
exactly? Thank you, Chairman. I just want to ask, I think, two questions that are very simple. Which role does Parliament play in the nominations of the board?
I'm not sure
I understand. And having asked that question, I'm also concerned about us as South Africa in implementing the international instruments like CEDAW. If this could have come to Parliament, we would have been concerned about the gender balance in that body. It looks like a rag to kings to me. Thank you.
No, thank you. I'm not sure about this rugby team is or the blue pools in Mofanova. No, Chang, I'm sure my story just covered one of my questions. I just wanted to understand, you'll pardon me, Chair, that I'm not sure how the board of INC is being composed. Not the board, the board. How is it being composed? And what become the relation with the executive authority? Just trying to understand the fundamentals in terms of the working of the board. I might tell you later why I'm asking that, so that you just understand the working relation around that. But the link to that is because when the presentation was made, there was a constant indication of the buy-in of the president or the politicians. That's why I'm asking what is the link in terms of the executive authority, because I would think that depending on the relationship, there is a linkage in terms of whatever way which outline or the relation between the executive and the board itself in terms of what they are doing and so on.
You know, this, my concern is that a lot of effort is put in, and I think it's quite brilliant what's going down. But my concern is 2010 is next year, and they stated that they have a working group of only 22. You know, shouldn't some fast action take place to ensure about 2010 we've got the right kind of recipe to sell? The right kind of bank research. Because I think there was no doubt in the amount of a small contingent they got of and shortage of staff. Will a proper job be done in time for 2010?
It's just a minor question. Compared to other nations of the world, I mean, how do we compare? What do they have to do? If you, for example, talk about Germany, if they project themselves and then you think about quality, I mean, if you look at the fact that they developing BMWs, Mercedes-Benz, I mean, it took a long time. How long will it take for us to come up with something like that, which is marketable, then that will project up onto the international scene?
Can I just throw the question as well? I think for some time now we've been asking that your whole strategy seems to be too Western-oriented. Over the last few years, I think all your country reps are basically in Western countries. In last year, I mean, there was a very, very strong cry from the committee. When do you get an African focus? When do you get an Eastern focus into this thing? And nothing that I've heard so far. I mean, are we trying to define ourselves for Western consumption? I don't know. I haven't heard you say anything about the Confederation Cup that's coming up. If you just look at the IPF, okay, that was a bonus that came our way unexpectedly. But if you look at the impact that has had on the people of India and the image of South Africa, within a 5-week period, I mean, it just sent off positive, you know, positive image and sentiment in a way that we couldn't have expected. But I went to the last match and I didn't see a South African flag in the stadium. I saw nothing about South Africa. I saw the president and speech was in the dark hour of the night and didn't come across too well ultimately. But I saw nothing about South Africa in there, unless you say just the successful hosting of the event and the audience that has made the event. I don't know. But from a marketing point of view, what did we gain? So it's a question of how are we positioning our, I mean, are we targeting a Western audience? Are we looking for other opportunities? And last year we just didn't get the right kind of answer to this.
Can I address that point?
Thanks very much for the point. Just going to quickly run through them there. Just a comment about SA Tourism. I'm going from the beginning. I'm going to run right through. SA Tourism combining with IMC, very different functions. SA Tourism is a destination marketing business. They sell South Africa as a tourist destination. They're solely focused on either leisure, business, or event tourism. What we do is work with them to provide an environment conducive to them doing their job. An example of that, over 2010, we've got a subcommittee which consists of ourselves and GCIS working with 2010 LSC and with SA Tourism. We're collaborating. So you see that our communication sits in different space. SA Tourism have got the disco dance going overseas. We're going to focus on mobilizing South Africa. 2010, the LSC are going to focus more on the event and football. So we'll collaborate in that area. So they work together as well. The comment about whether the review process was inclusive in terms of arts and culture, you asked the question. The review process, which actually happened before I was actually part of the team, was amongst the current people with whom we were closely associated. What we've indicated is going forward, we want to work much more closely with all the other departments and to answer the other points at the same time, right through into all the layers of government as well. Unfortunately, a presentation of this nature is by nature superficial, so we can't list all of the different bodies that we would in fact engage with. But the intention, for the language, is to go right through the chain that is South Africa as such. So arts and culture right there, because social cohesion is right there at their zenith. And just so that you know as well, in my other life, I sit as a board director of the National Arts Festival, and I'm very passionate about our arts and culture as well. The next question also is Mr. Dulanga. It's not a shift now away from business and towards people. It's not an or, it's an and. And I think that's crucial, and that was to speak to your point as well. The issue of where the parliament should be, of course. I mean, all of the bodies that represent the broader terminology of government, we would include every part of those as being ambassadors of Brand South Africa. I noted the comment here of alignment between the DA and the ANC. That was rather nice. But I'm not sure I can wait long enough to the whole issue, because I am getting a little older here. Again, in terms of the thing about what inspires us and what's this new position going to be, and I think this is a very poignant and very important question as such. What unifies us in our South Africanness as well? It's quite interesting trying. We haven't yet identified that positioning high ground, we'll be honest with you. But what's informing us at the moment, and I think it's, we first looked at it 7 years ago when we developed what we call the brand key of South Africa. We said maybe the Western world, to your point, Chair, doesn't have all the answers. And how has that been proved more true than what's happened in the last 18 months? So what we're saying is there's a new high ground out there. We think it lies somewhere in the territory of sustainable, balanced growth. Growth that is equitable, growth that is fair, but growth nevertheless. We're not sure how to term it yet. But it's a new way of growing that the world hasn't yet begun to understand. Most of the world's growth has occurred in a fairly consumptive manner. And we've got to avoid that and find a way to create some form of sustainable, virtuous growth. But we are working on that positioning high ground as such. The question was asked about the role of Parliament. I'd like to defer to Temba, if you'd like to speak to the board nomination, just maybe come back at the end and handle that issue, is how that's, because I'm interested in the veiled question that was hidden there that you sort of coming back to. Is the organization big enough to deliver? We may be small in number, but we're big on heart and big on intellect. And what it also doesn't talk about is we basically ignite others, either directly ourselves or by service providers that we do work with. So we're not purely carrying the cart on ourselves. We are there to light fires.
and that's sort of what we do. But obviously, you know, what we are concerned about is that too much of our budget isn't deployed on the human resource side. We want to spend the money to make stuff happen. But if you'd like to give us more money, we'd happily employ more people so that our ratios aren't out of line. You asked the point as well about Germany. How long did it take them to earn quality? Absolutely right. It took them a long, long time, and it took a unique... I don't think even overtly they did it in a manner that was planned. I think it was a circumstantial... Eventually they got onto, wow, we earn quality, this is quite exciting. Because they realized quality could come out of premium. But what was interesting, in 2006, they ran two campaigns in Germany.
Yeah.
One was to change the view that people saw Germans as efficient, but not friendly. So the theme was trying to make friends. And people came away from Germany thinking, hey, these Germans have got a sense of humor. It's extraordinary. Fanpark did that. One tool, a fanpark, changed the way people thought about Germans. Quite extraordinary. But they did a second thing. They ran a whole campaign called Land of Ideas. And they went back and they looked at the DNA of German inventions, creations, everybody from Beethoven right through to BMW. And they created a year-long event which celebrated 365 ideas that had made Germany famous. Brilliant concept, and we'd like to replicate something of that nature here, because you could imagine a land of unlimited possibilities. I mean, this morning I was reminded of something quite extraordinary. I'd forgotten completely. South Africa bought the world prepaid mobile phones. You know that? Before that, everyone was on contracts. There was no such thing as buy your card over the counter. We did it. Quite extraordinary. And if you think what our essence is as a brand, inspiring the world to new ways to do things, it's extraordinary how many times we can actually deliver on that one. Just to talk, Chair, to your question about the Western orientation and let's call it the more traditional axis. Absolutely not. It isn't there, because I didn't unpack the side of the target market. But we're very much informed by what our stakeholders need. So as we sat, we went to a GCI workshop the other day and sat in the international relations cluster, and very much the South-South axis is on the table. And we will move the way our customers need us to move. I mean, that's really what we do. That also obviously involves a very heavy drive into key pivotal points in Africa as well. So I'm sorry that didn't come through overtly in the presentation, but it is in the formal document in terms of unpacking the target market as such. And then finally, the comment you made as well about IPL and brand power. Do you know, has anyone got any idea how much the IPL spent on that event? 180 million rand in a period of 5 weeks. Absolutely extraordinary. Do you know how much you've got in the Confederation Cup? 15 million over 8 months. Now, is it surprising that we haven't been able to steal the news yet? If you didn't think back through the year, we started off with a global economic crisis, a situation of a president in waiting, in question, an election, the IPL, a gift, absolutely, in terms of what the world thought about, but again stole the news. So we've only been able to launch a Confederation Cup campaign effectively in the last week. So, and we work up a very different budget, and we work up very different controls. You know, I watched, what's the gentleman's name, Modi, who said that, saying, I can tell you how to do this whole thing. You do this, he hasn't tried working with FIFA. I mean, it's very different. You know, this is, again, we must also point out, this is FIFA's World Cup in South Africa. It's not actually South Africa's event. It's one of those situations. But the lessons from the IPL were extraordinary. And the benefits in terms of the reach were absolutely incredible. So it was a brilliant thing, but just to make you feel very comfortable, very much we will push the brand where the brand needs to go to serve the needs of the bodies that we work with. It will not be a traditional only there. It's unfortunate that the one country manager that was located in India chose to resign, and because we were under review, we didn't replace at that point in time, because we didn't want to commit to overheads on contracts. We didn't know exactly. Who knows if country manager is the right way to do country management? So the last thing we want to do is actually just stick another X 100,000 rand for somebody out there. If the way to do it is actually working with the embassy, might be better. I hope I've answered all the questions that were put this way. Sorry, I want to just remember just to talk to that one.
Okay.
Chair, just to comment on the other issues very briefly, I think that sports can play quite a vital role in mobilizing and uniting South Africans. So we've seen examples, the World Cup, the African Nations Cup in 1996 when we won that. We saw South Africans actually getting together in a very united way, and I think we're not exploring that. So if, for instance, we're using the example of the Confederations Cup or the IPL game, I think that maybe part of what we need to do as the NC is to get into very strong partnerships with the sports bodies to see the extent to which we can actually use sports activities to mobilize South Africans. I think that's important. Your question here about the African focus of our work, an important question for us as INC, but also for SA Tourism, because what in our trade session with the INC and SA Tourism, one of the key factors that came across was the fact that the majority of tourists who actually come to this country are actually coming from the African continent, and yet a lot of our campaigns don't tend to focus on that market. They're taking it as a, they're taking it for granted. So I think that we all need to go through some mindset shift to begin to think of the world as including our own continent and not as the world beyond the ocean. So it's something that I think we really need to take on board. The department consulted why arts and culture, etc., and other departments. When the consultants started the review, one of the biggest problems we had was that we just had a short time frame where they identified many departments, including arts and culture, etc., but the consultants could not just secure the meetings with the key decision makers in those departments. But I think that we had accepted that we need to talk to departments beyond just foreign affairs and DGI, but it's something that we need to look at. But the question I've been asked to deal with specifically is with the appointment of the board. You see, the IMC is not created through an act of parliament. It's a trust, essentially. So the way it was conceptualized was that the IMC would be a partnership between government and the private sector. So the idea is that we create the structure, we put in money as government, private sector comes on board and puts in money. It did not turn out that way. So the way the board is constituted now, or the way it was constituted, is that GCIS and DFA and DPI were actually basically invited to nominate people, to influential people to be part of the board in the business sector and in other areas of society. So people were nominated, the list was then taken to cabinet, and cabinet basically approved that list of board members. So that's the kind of structure that we have at this particular point. But again, it's up to the new administration to review and see how, if need be, the board needs to be constructed. And we can put on the table some of the ideas that we have, because we believe that the board is too big and we need to restructure it ourselves. But it's something that we can discuss with the minister. And to also make sure that it's not just government and the private sector. What other role players can we bring on board? What bodies represented there? Maybe community representation, etc. So it's something that we can look at going forward. So we'll come back to the committee on that.
And
gender as well, yes. Thank you very much. Of course, where can we buy this scarf?
I'm supposed to be something else. I've been wearing it. It's so hot and great. You can see my matching underwear. These scarves we're actually having made. Can we talk about it? Can we talk about these scarves? Tomorrow evening, we're going to be giving them to the people who go to the World Economic Forum and South African Soiree. And we think there's actually a bit of a business. We think they'll go like hotcakes. So any entrepreneurs around the table? You didn't hear it yet.
No, but don't forget Johnny's thing about giving it to members of parliament, because we're also going to promote it. There are 400 in the one house and 19 the other.
No, no.
No, but you can't let it be
aware. Thank
you very much. Thank you to the INC. I think it's been quite an interesting presentation with new ideas and forward-looking strategy. Can we now invite MDDA, Media Development Diversity Agency, is that right?
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I've got a commitment that I must keep this and that each member of this committee will get a scarf. Can I do that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're Paul Bannister, is that right?
Yes.
What is your position?
Acting Chief Executive Officer.
And then Mr. McKenzie, what is
he? He was the previous acting CEO.
Look, when you get the scarf,
he stood down.
Please don't tell Kotaku it's made in China.
No. I've never heard of the Irish one, by the way. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh.
And I'm in the media, so. Where's my... There it is.
Thanks there you go.
Lot. Thanks a lot. Thank you. Thank you for your comment.
All right. May I take this opportunity of welcoming the MDDA team. That's in the city. Am I getting it right? Yeah. Welcome to... committee. I think by now you know all the members. You've been sitting through all of this, so we're not going to go through a round of introduction. Maybe you should just introduce your team and then proceed with the presentation.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Gugum Sidi and I'm the chairman of the MDDA. I'll start by introducing our team as Lumkum Tinte. On my right is our CEO. It's Nomonde Kongweka, one of the board members. We've got Mshieni Kumisa, our new CFO. We've got Sidiwa Minye, our board member. Ms. Ntombeleng Zimande, extreme left. We've got Ingrid Lowe, our new board member as well. And we've got members of the team, Jayashi Tata, who's the project director, and Lumuta Ndawande, the manager in the CEO's office. And of course, Mr. Temba Masango. I take it that we're probably don't even need to present because you are all familiar with MDDA. You could just fire with a question. I will take you through... just on a few points of introduction on what the MDDA really was mandated to do. Can you all hear me? My voice tends to be a bit softer. Better? Okay. MDDA is celebrating 5 years operational, even though it was established in 2003. It is established in terms of an Act of Parliament and reports to the President through the Minister and the Presidency, and of course to Parliament as well. The agency today presents the strategic plan for the MTEF period 2009 to 2012 with a specific focus on the financial year 2009 to 2010. The strategic plan was tabled in Parliament by the Minister and the Presidency on the 5th of June 2009. The plan and our priorities are informed by the legislative mandate and the medium to long-term planning processes. If we didn't have new members, I probably wouldn't go through this, but I think that it's important for us to go back and visit these key areas on why, on what sets us apart and what our mandate is. I'll start off by talking about the vision. We believe each and every South African citizen should have access to a choice of a diverse range of media.
Our mission is that the MGDA is a development agency that will assist in building an environment where a diverse and vibrant creative media flourishes and reflects the needs of all South Africans. It sounds pretty to look at and pretty to see, but it really is important when you look at what some of our people in disadvantaged communities go through and who don't have access to any kind of media. It's an issue that is very close to our hearts. The mandate is to create an enabling environment for media development and diversity, which reflects the needs and aspirations of all South African citizens. It's also to redress exclusion and marginalization of disadvantaged communities and persons from access to the media and the media industry. It is also to promote the development and diversity by providing support primarily to community and small commercial media projects. We'll go to the objectives that set up the agency in terms of the Act. The objectives were to encourage ownership and control and access to media by historically disadvantaged communities and cultural groups, to encourage the development of human resources and training and capacity building within the media industry, especially amongst the historically disadvantaged groups, to encourage the channeling of resources to the community media and small commercial media sectors. It is also to raise public awareness with regard to media development and diversity issues. It is also to support initiatives which promote literacy and a culture of reading. We know how far this would go when you look at our metric results every year. It's also to encourage research regarding media development and diversity and to liaise with other statutory bodies such as ICASA and RISASA. But of course, to continue doing this, we need to convince the commercial media and broadcasters to understand our responsibilities and commit more funding. I'm mentioning this because of the kind of funding that we receive and at times how long we have to wait for some of the money that comes through. Our approach is to provide grants and subsidies both to individual and media projects and to create an enabling environment for media development and diversity. It is also to leverage resources and support through technical assistance. It's to conduct and fund research, facilitate capacity building, and advocate for media diversity. Our values, again, I'll go back to saying they sound pretty to look at, but they really drive what we set out to do. We set up a thing, integrity. We believe we are honest. We are reliable, we're fair, accountable, and responsible for our actions in everything that we do. When we go out to the projects in the different areas, in how we deal with our clients, we're caring, we're tolerant, we're courteous, and respectful to our staff and clients alike. We're a very professional team that is efficient, effective, is strong in service delivery, punctual, performance-driven, and works collectively. Our commitment is that we are passionate and we go the extra mile. We are responsive to any queries that come through. We have a strong work ethic. We're consistent and accessible. I mentioned these ones in particular because if you looked at some of the salaries that our staff members get, you'll understand what it means for them to be here, and even our board members, we really are not doing this for our health or the money that we get. Transparency. We are an open and participatory agency that deals with internal and external parties. And lastly, our legislative environment, amongst others. But I don't know whether I should take you through that, and you can have a look at that. I will hand over to Lumko to take you through the operational and current period review and highlights.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good evening to the members. Staff in
in order to assist you into the roadmap to the next 3 years, we're just reflecting on the highlights of where we're coming from. Having been set up in 2003, and to those who know our offices in Parktown, we are now moving to Princess of Wales Terrace, which is opposite the Sunside Park Hotel. It would be nice if members, when they're in Joburg, visit us and see where we're located. We are governed by a set of regulations which were prescribed through a public process and were gazetted. And we have our funding through the funding that comes from both government and the established media. And we therefore had funding agreements with the funding bodies, the broadcast media, and the print media. And we started in real terms funding from January 2004. And now we, as the chair was saying, we're celebrating 5 years. And our funding agreements were for 5 years, and they were expiring, expiring this year. But we've been able to engage with the funders, the broadcast media and the print media, and we can announce here that we have been able to renew the funding agreement for the next 5 years. So we do have a life again for the next 5 years, in addition to government support, of course. Also, just to indicate that we have been able to, in the last financial year, to, as the CEO of GTIS was saying, to establish a relationship with the Department of Communications, where they agreed to give us 20 million to run and support community radio stations in respect of program production. And that was a great achievement in terms of our work, adding value to the sustainability and strengthening of the community radio sector. We also were part and parcel of the marketing and communications charter processes. And just in the nutshell, we can proudly say in the 5 years we've been able to, using just 77 million, give grants to approximately 239 projects throughout the country in all 9 provinces. And 39 of those projects did not exist prior to the establishment of the agency. And I've been able to give bursaries to more than 55 radio and print managers. And in addition, we have trained more than 400 people in the sector, both community and commercial, small commercial sector. Those are just a list of some of the things that we have done, which members can go through them in their spare time. But we have, in the main, we've completed quite a number of research work, which has informed our strategies in respect of what interventions and how to intervene to pursue our mandate in respect of media development and diversity. Some of the highlights in the financial year that we just completed is we completed a research into the trends of media ownership and control in South Africa. It's quite an interesting research, and I would really invite members to really read that that picture. It gives you a picture of who owns what in respect of media in South Africa. We're going to be publicly launching that research in the next coming weeks, and it will also be available on our website. One of the areas that has been challenging in respect of the people we support, and I think you'd remember last year from one of the board members, Mr. Chris Murdeke, who committed to assisting in in the development of a toolkit, which basically gives you ABC of advertising and marketing, so as to just capacitate these community and small commercial media in respect of advertising and marketing skills. And that toolkit is now ready, and we are going to be distributing to them, and we think it's going to help them. We have signed agreements with USASA, and one of the questions we were getting from the broadcast media is to what extent are we going to be able to harmonize the mandates between ourselves and USASA. And we have signed agreements which provide for a relationship between ourselves and USASA. USASA is the Universal Service and Access Agency of South Africa, which reports to the Department of Communication. And we have, in the agreements that we have signed with the broadcasters, they are going to be making their contributions to ourselves in respect of the regulation that has been imposed by ICASA. And we'll just have that relationship with USASA, and the contributions will be made to us. We have focused our energies in capacitating our staff, and those are the respective areas where we have capacitated our staff. The one thing that maybe we may want to note is there is a huge growth of demand for MDGA support. And unfortunately, we do not necessarily have enough to respond to that demand. And we hope that together with yourselves and government, we need to really look at the capacity and the resources of MDGA so that it is able to have an impact and make a mark in respect of the media landscape in South Africa. Just to show you a few of our beneficiaries, those are the newspapers that we're supporting that are spread all over the country, from KZN to Limpopo, and radio stations and other publications. This is just one of the sessions we had at training, because one of the, again, the questions that came from our engagement with Parliament last year was, to what extent are we capacitating these projects to be able to manage the funds that we're giving them? So that was one session where we were capacitating them in the respect of financial management. And this is one feedback we got from one of the beneficiaries of our grant and support. Members will also be interested in seeing, this is one of the beneficiaries of MDGA. She runs a magazine in KZN, and she was nominated as a fellow in the Eisenhower Fellowship program in the United States. I think, is she there? She's still in the United States. She's been there for the last few months. And this is one of the direct beneficiaries of MDGA. And those who know that fellowship is just not accessible to everyone. We do have challenges, of course. Internally, they range from our capacity. And the more we have beneficiaries, the more we need to capacitate ourselves in order to be able to strengthen the monitoring and evaluation capacity. The chair has already spoken to the challenges that, of course, we do need to reward our team comparable to the other agencies who, if we don't, they grab them. That's our staff complement in the financial year that we just completed. Now, just to focus quickly on our priorities for the next year. The rationale, of course, being that the point that the chair has spoken to, the deprivation that most communities suffer in respect of access to information, the fact that while in the broadcasting space you do have quite a lot of media products in a whole range of our languages, but in the print space there is limitations. In the main, you have most of our media products in English and Afrikaans, and I'm talking here both in terms of the mainstream media and the small media, and that's therefore one of the challenges that we're facing. On the broadcasting side, one of the challenge is the limitation in respect of broadcast frequency spectrum. Digital broadcasting is probably going to provide an opportunity, but currently we still do have that kind of a challenge. Also, as I've already spoken to the advertising capacity challenge, and as a result, the inability of our target beneficiaries to acquire the Audit Bureau Circulation Certificate, which then disadvantages them in terms of then tapping on the advertising cage that exists in the market. Of course, the depth of knowledge and information that can adequately identify critical issues in the small commercial and community media sector in South Africa for innovation. The lack of research and information specific to the sectors that inform program development and strategic focus. In the main, our overall objective is to ensure that all citizens can access information in a language of their choice and to transform media access, ownership and control patterns in South Africa. And we always ask the question, but how are we going to do this with the little money that you have and dealing with big media that has big budgets? So that's a challenge for all of us. And the purpose, of course, to strengthen the sector through the provision and leverage of resources, knowledge and skills in pursuit of promoting media development and diversity. In trying to achieve that, we have set ourselves these key result areas, which range from advocating for media development and diversity, partnership and stakeholder management, grant funding, capacity building. In this regard, our focus in the coming financial year and to the future is to strengthen and consolidate the current beneficiaries towards sustainability. One of the challenges, as I said before, is that we have so much demand now for support, but we don't have that much resources to support them. And this is even worse in the print media space, because the print media funding is not increasing compared to the broadcast media funding. And we do need to begin now to communicate our focus so that we minimize the number of applications that we get for print media support. Unless, of course, we all work together and strengthen MGDA to have enough capacity. Hopefully, we're thinking that if from the government side we can increase the funding, then we'll be able to deal with those challenges. Research and knowledge management is one of the key areas. Media literacy and promoting the culture of reading. Communication, quality programming and production in community media broadcasting. Fundraising and resource mobilization. Financial management. And of course, internal business processes and customer perspectives. I'm going to skip most of this slide and go to the slide that provides a summary of all these key results areas and the strategic objectives and the activities thereof to achieve those strategic objectives. That will be the slide. What's the number of that? Yes, that one. I'm basically going to talk to the key deliverables in terms of each of those priority areas, and I'm not going to talk to all the listed activities that you'll find in the previous slides in the interest of time. Of course, when we discuss, we'll probably then talk more to that. In respect of advocating for media development and diversity, we just completed a research in respect of what can we do to achieve what the Act provides, that will provide low-interest loan funding to small commercial media. And what came out of that research is that we should not duplicate and establish another loan scheme. Instead, we should work with the existing agencies, IGC, NEF, etc., and see to what extent can they support us and have a loan scheme that we can use to support small commercial media. We think that then the print media, given the challenge that I spoke to in respect of print media, will then at least be supported in this regard. Because some of the applications we get, they say, we don't want grants, we want some loan that will help us establish ourselves. So this team, we think that is going to help them. But of course, it's subject to us lobbying ITC and NEF. And we already met with the minister who said he's going to assist us in meeting with those institutions and see if we can find each other between us and them. Stakeholder management, of course, we continue to have a strategy in that regard because it's only together that we can do more with our stakeholders. Grant funding, we hope to, in this financial year, fund 8 community radio stations, 6 newspapers, 4 initiatives, 4 atypical media projects, 4 small commercial newspapers, monitor about 10 projects, and support capacity building initiatives, and monitor 5 of them, and support 2 research projects. In the sector of capacity building, we hope to train safety beneficiaries. We hope to have 1 workshop on financial management again. We have identified this area as very critical. We have had clean reports in the sector of audit right through our establishment, and we want to continue in that regard. And one of our worries is therefore that those who receive our money should use and manage the money properly so that we don't find ourselves in trouble with Auditor General because of their capacity. We in the area of research and knowledge management, we want to support those research projects and conduct seminars to discuss, deliberate over those research. Media literacy and culture of reading, we conducted in the previous financial year a very successful project in the Alfred Nzot District Municipality, and we hope this year to have another one in Northwest Province. We have not identified which district municipality. We have developed a communication strategy, but of course it's not funded, and we want to increase funding in order to be able to implement that funding. In the last year, members would remember that one of the questions we got from yourselves was, how do we communicate our work in all the other provinces and in the remote areas? And we, in answering that, we said, yes, we partner with GCIS and other provincial and local governments and agencies. But we then packaged a strategy and a plan which, if funded, it will help us at meet that objective. In terms of the program production project, we hope to support 5 computer stations in the coming financial year. In the sector of fundraising, we have... The board has said we need to focus on international fundraising so that we can strengthen our funding capacity. The assumption critical to this is, of course, that the legislative and regulatory framework exists to support the efforts of the sector, that the Act provides for the development and support of the sector, and there is an approved budget for project implementation. Funding increases beyond the current funding. I've already spoken to the worth, the amount of applications that we receive. The MDJ regulations prescribe categories to be funded. We follow that regulation. It provides that we fund more the community media and less the small commercial and less research, in order to really make a mark and empower communities in this regard. So we follow that regulation and we always comply with that. We of course need to increase and maximize the profiling of the agency. Of course we assume that beneficiaries will always be willing to and able to participate in our interventions, that there is sufficient base of trainers and mentors in the sector to support our work. We only have a small complement of staff, so we rely on trainers and mentors that we contract and manage. Of course, key is the support from the board. There are 2 main risk areas that we identified, but we, of course, provide actions to mitigate those risks. Is 1, the lack of funding, and the human resources to implement the operational plan. In respect of actions, of course, of enhanced fundraising, and in respect of human resources, the board has approved an organogram that has increased our capacity in order to at least manage within the constraints that we're facing. And that is the organogram that we have. And Parliament would be happy to see that almost all positions are, all funded positions do have people. The ones that are green are unfunded positions, but in the coming financial year, we hope with the increased funding from broadcast media, we will fill those positions. I will now ask the CFO to just talk to the summary of the finances so as to complete our presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and good evening to members and all in the House. The budget for MTTA as at 2009 to 2012 reads as follows. The income for 2009-2010 is 36.7 million. For 2010-2011 is 39.5 million. For 2011-2012 is 41.6 million. The expenses consisted of program costs, operational costs, and capital expenditure. For program costs, 2009-2010, we have 26.1 million. For 2010-2011, we have 28 million. For 2011-2012, we have 29.4 million. For operational expenses, we have for 2009-2010, 10.4 million, 2010-2011, 11.3 million, for 2011-2012, it's 12 million. For capital expenditure, we have 177 million for 2009-2010, 129 for 2010-2011. For 2011-2012, we had 223,000. And on the note, for financial year 2009 to 2012, the budget is based on the human resource requirement as per the economic. This budget is in compliance with the regulatory limit of 25% of for administration. We assume that funding agreement with the SABC and ETV will be successfully renewed in the current financial year. The budget excludes 20 million from the Department of Communication. Our source of funds comes from the government, which is GCIS, and from print media and broadcast media. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. CEO. Can I press that? I think you could all tell you, bring the fear to Mr. CFO. This is his first session in front of you. He omitted to just mention the detail is correct, but the number in 2008 to 2009 is actually 2009 to 2010. I believe when we come back here, he will knock your socks off. Just to move on, I'd like to really thank the members and thank GCIS, and in particular thank our members our board members who've already left, Mazibuko Jaha and Mr. Chris Modern. Their term ended a couple of months ago. We really do hope that we, as MDDA, we're going to ensure diversity in the media in each and every municipal district of our country. We also plan to ensure increased media in different indigenous languages, reflecting unity in diversity. We also plan to ensure rural communities are empowered, jobs are created, poverty is alleviated, and we have an informed society. And, Chairperson, we believe we are aptly placed in reporting to the GCIS, but I'm sure we'll answer to that later. Thank you. The members of the board and staff members will respond to some of the questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There we are. Any questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is just a comment. I think, Chair, listening to the Chairperson of the MPP, so far, I think they're the only organization that I think they're doing very well, despite of being underpaid. I remember when we were during drafting the MCDA legislation, you know, there were some talks amongst us. What is this exactly? What is it? You know, what is it that we're doing? But I'm quite happy to consider the progress that they've made. But there's just one question to you. We know what is happening in the in the SABC. And the question that I want to ask, Chair, how does the circumstances of SABC, how does it impact into MDDA? I've seen in your slides, you're also expecting something to them, and these guys, they don't understand. Thanks.
It's one question, and also to join the appreciation. I wish that all the entities who are still coming tomorrow onwards, it will be the same in terms of the work which they support to perform. But the questions around the issue, there's a matter which I've just noticed, which is the issue of the agreement which has been raised between USAFA and MDDA. I just wanted to get more clarity around that, whether that it means that the portion is supposed to be contributed through the legislation, the ECA, is the one which is diverted to MDDA. I just want to get a clarity around if indeed is the same, will that mean the entire portion is supposed to go that side, come to this side? And if it's so, because that one which goes to USAFA, it's a matter of the legislation, that they should be paying that. How is that going to assist, if that's the true version? How is it going to assist? Because then it will mean you know your stable income. Because not the matter whether they are willing or not, as the others they do. It's a matter that they must be able to transfer that money. How is it going to alleviate the challenge which you are having in terms of funding?
Any other questions?
Okay.
thank you. the questions on the funding, so they are not tired. Firstly, thank you again for the appreciation of the work. In respect of the question, they are related in that we think SABC will, they have committed to renewing the funding agreement, and we think that they will make the contribution. The reason is it's a compliance, it's a regulatory matter. The Electronic Communications Act provides that each broadcast service licensee contributes 0.2% of its annual turnover to either the Universal Service and Access Fund. In the case where they are contributing to the MGTA, that gets recognized, and therefore that will be compliance. And as such, even if they have challenges, we think that this is not much. We think that they will be able to give us, because this is not much of their budget. It's possibly the interest of whatever they have. hopefully they'll be. They have made a commitment. We're just waiting for the signed agreement. Similarly, with ETV, they have not. They also one of the broadcasters that have not signed, but we think that we're meeting them tomorrow. We think that they will make the commitment. Most broadcasters, if not all, they have committed to, in complying with the CASA regulations, to make their contributions to the MDDA. Because, of course, of the relationship they've had with the MDDA and the fact that the MDDA have the contribution they make to the MDDA goes directly to the development of the broadcast industry, and they therefore benefit. So they've made that commitment. The ones that have decided to portion it, it's like multi-choice, because they do have an interest in respect of the work of USAFA. They said they will make most of their contributions to the MDDA, and then they will reserve some little bit to then make that contribution to USAFA, guided by to what extent is the digital migration strategy shaped by USAFA, and therefore what will be the need and how that will be rolled out. So they've made their commitment to MDDA, but they'll contribute a portion to USAFA when the needs arise. All the others have committed to making the contributions directly to MDDA. So the agreement that we then have with USAFA provides for a cooperation between ourselves, so that given that in their mandate, though it's not clear in respect of broadcasting, but they do have to provide information in terms of to what extent is universal service and access in the broadcasting industry covered. So we agree that we'll work together and provide them with such information. And if there are any other projects that we can together take on, we will, in terms of that framework, agree on those projects and together implement those projects. So that's the framework, that's the agreement in the main. It really just provides for a relationship between the two entities so that we don't unduly compete against each other, but cooperate as the constitution of the country does require from all organs of state and every other government department.
I just to respond to your comments, we really do appreciate that you do see the kind of hurdles that we have to cross. The MDDA is not necessarily a balloons and ribbons organization, and we don't intend to be, but it's important to see how relevant it is and to understand and appreciate how relevant it is. You know, I was quite impressed with some of the questions that the chairperson actually asked the group before us, the INC, on not focusing internally on Africa, but looking more outside. But we really do believe that the MDDA charity begins at home. If we don't empower our citizens, we're really as good as, you know, we won't be recognized. We will never go forward. You asked about the relationship between MDDA and the SABC. We unfortunately have members of the board who are from the SABC, so we have open communication channels where we are kept abreast about some of the challenges that they're facing and how we can also help them overcome some of them. So yes, we are cognizant of them, but there isn't much we can do in some instances, but we are aware of them and we are kept informed at all times.
Do you want to say something? No. Just to affirm what they said, I'm not here on behalf of SABC, but to the extent that I'm the member that's most consistent with the organization, to say the problems that we have are of a cash flow nature, which means we just have to slightly delay the payment of the SAGAREM rather than delay of our commitment. But this is one that we really hold, the commitment that we hold in very high esteem, and it's the obligation that we surely are going to meet. and the details of how will be shared when we meet the committee, then as the SABC next week.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I also join the other members in complimenting the MPPA? It reminds me of my first speech in Parliament. It was when the MPPA was established, and I didn't even know what to put together. And here it is now. They are running smoothly. I just want to ask something on their strategic objective, because it didn't go over this to explain. I can see here that you've promoted and strengthened the small commercial print and community. I want to know, media, I want to know whether you have in your plan looked at the visually impaired, the disabled people, whether you have any difficulty or you have any intentions of looking at their incapability of reading.
Thanks, Chair. Mine, I was checking here with the slides. Unfortunately, I didn't find the slides. But is it possible to get maybe a breakdown in terms of beneficiaries per province, and also in terms of categories, whether it's a print or it's a local radio station and things like that? And on a lighter note, Chairperson, I suggest that let us not give them more budget, because they will start in fighting and bickering like SABC.
May I ask Jayashu to answer some of those questions, because they pertain to her area of work?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of working with visually impaired people, we have a commitment, obviously, to look at marginalized communities broadly. That includes people with disability, women in particular, rural people. I think the issue has been raised about resources. Obviously, to be able to reach out to communities like that, we need greater resources. So that's one element of it. But we are looking to engage with the issue more broadly.
Thanks. Just to add that we've had beneficiaries that were produced, media that was produced by that community. So we are committed, and that is one of the priority areas. And just finally to indicate to Member Mkhize that indeed we have a full detail of the respective contributions in respect of provinces and the categories. And when we come back here to present the annual report, we will give you that detail in respect of how much we have provided for each province and the respective categories. But as I said earlier on, in respect of the categories, 60% will be community media, 25% will be small commercial media, 5% will be research, and 10% will be other, which is then any other media that then the board will decide to support in addition to those categories.
Chade, no further questions. Mr. Mateko, and to all the members from your team, MDDA team, IMCD, I think they four left. But let me thank all of you for the presentations, for the professional manner in which you have presented and prepared this thing, and for the clarity of the responses. Thank you very much, and then we'll see you on the 17th for the debate. Thanks, guys.